Morning, Jay.
Good morning, Honorable.
Ngiyaphila, siyabonga.
Eh, nami ngiyaphila ma.
Amen.
Ngibonga kakhulu.
Ngibuyile, Che.
Oh, mabutsoni.
Yebo, Che.
Siyabonga.
Thank you, Che.
Yeah, siyabonga. Siyabonga, abanye abantu. Hello.
Ngiyakhuluma, Che.
Bengiba ngasikhona umuntu okhulumayo.
Oh, nathi ngumamhlengwa.
Oh, okay. Uyakhuluma ma?
No, Che, bengibingelela usonti ma.
Oh, okay. Hey, kade sasigcina ukucala ngomkhuleko. Asiceleni ngawo umkhuleko. Babo ingcwele yise Nkosi yethu Jesu.
Unkulunkulu wethu ungophelele, ulufanele udumo simakazi. Akekho njengawe. Sikunikeza udumo olukufaneleyo nakulo nkonzo. Sikunikeza udumo olukufaneleyo nakulo mhlangano. Baba wethu ongcwele, thatha indawo yakho simakade. Unkulunkulu wethu omuhle, yenza uba singabeki ubuthina kodwa sibeke izimpilo zabantu. Unkulunkulu wethu ongcwele, sikuthembile ke baba, akekho ofana nawe. Sikuthembile njengoba nabantu besekhulumile, thatha udumo lwakho. Isandla sakho Nkosi yami sihlazane nje sasinyeza. Kufika nakuphi udumo lonke lungokwakho. Abadinga induduzo, abadinga ini, nabadinga impilo. Baba wethu ongcwele, sibanikele esandleni sakho. UJesu Kristu Inkosi yethu. Amen.
Amen. Siyabonga ma.
Amen.
Good morning, honorable members. We thank God that today I'm much better than last week. Thank you, honorable members. The devil is a liar. Today I'll finish my meeting. Neliswa, can you get, I declare this meeting officially open. I welcome you, Chair and Deputy Chair, CEO and board members of the NYDA. You are all welcome, and you are all welcome, honorable members and our staff members. I declare this meeting officially open. Nelly, can we get apologies?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, honorable members, board members of the NYDA and officials from the NYDA. I only received one apology, Chair, from Honorable Sonyane. There was no reason. It just said it's an apology for Honorable Sonyane.
Thank you, but Chair. She told me that she'll be doing organizational work in the Eastern Cape from Sunday, Monday, and I'm sure for the whole week. She did told me last week Friday. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, all welcome, honorable members. Without any waste of time, what is the next item then?
Recording in progress.
It's the presentation by the Audit and Risk Committee of the NYDA on the second, third, and fourth quarterly report of the NYDA. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's get the presentation from the ARC.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you can hear me. Good morning to all the members on the call. So I'll be presenting the presentation from the committee, Audit and Risk Committee. I wish to just, I think it's important to mention that we are a new committee that was appointed in May. And so we'll be reporting on quarter 2, 3, and 4 of the activities of the committee. And as a new committee, we've actually only held one meeting ourselves, which was the one on the 25th of May. So we'll be sharing my screen so I can show the presentation. However, I will take the presentation as read, and then I'll take the committee through it.
Can you introduce all your members since you're a new committee?
Thank you, Chair. I'll do so. So I am Rabezu Kungwane, and I'm an independent quorum committee member, and I'm accompanied by Advocate Mary Rose, who is also Rosie, who's also an independent committee member. And we also have Mr. Tulisani Ndlela, who is part of the board members of the NYDA. So it's a committee of three members. Thank you
very much. Can we see their faces because we don't know them?
Okay.
Not Tulisa, Mr. Tulisa, we know him.
Okay, Advocate Mary Rosie.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I'd just like to mention that we are a new committee, but I was part of the members that were previously seconded from the Department of Women to assist while there was still a gap in the Audit and Risk Committee previously in the NYDA.
Oh, okay.
So that being the case, I will be sharing my screen. Kindly advise if you can see it, Chair. Then
I can see it.
Okay, perfect. So as mentioned, in terms of the meetings that were held by the committee, including the previous committee, we've held 12 meetings in the year 2021, 2022. And those are the dates in which the meetings were held. Those were the special and the ordinary meetings. And if I move on to slide number 4, the key thing that we wanted to highlight here is that management has confirmed that they've met 100% of their performance targets. And as a committee, we have raised that we do think that the targets that are being measured against are still a bit low. And we do note that there are budget constraints that warrant the targets based on where they are. However, we also, as a committee, recommended that we need an improved communication strategy that goes out into the public that unpacks what the mandate is of the NYDA, and in actual fact that highlights that some of the targets set are not, they're quite material relative to some of the unemployment and job opportunities that the government is setting in general. So management did take us into confidence around how some of those targets were set. And so we just asked them for a better communication method and strategy around that. When it comes to the annual performance plan, and please feel free to ask questions as I proceed. So in terms of the plan, we noted that there were three targets that were revised, and those relate to the ICT target, which was increased from 50% to 70% in terms of the milestones of implementing certain ICT projects, and also in terms of increasing partnerships as well as job placements. And that report was recommended to the board for approval. On the third point, which is around the quarterly management accounts as well as the unaudited financials, we did note that there was a large unspent amount, which is the 429 million, roughly 430 million that was unspent at the end of quarter four. And as a committee, we've expressed concerns around that amount being unspent. And management has confirmed that they about 92% of that, I think it's 326 million, has been committed and will be spent towards the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative in the following year. There are engagements that will be taking place with National Treasury on getting approval for those funds to be rolled over into the new year. And our understanding is that the norm is for National Treasury to come back to to the agency with an approval by the 30th of September. So we're expecting a formal approval by then around these amounts and whether or not we can roll them or they can roll them forward. If I proceed to the next slide, we did note that there were no unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure that were reported. And also when it comes to deviations, there were two particular deviations that were in line with National Treasury's prescriptions, and those related to suppliers of software licensing. Those were the only two that were identified. And when we look at the budget for the year 2022 to 2023, as a committee, we had recommended that the team looks at the ICT budget, particularly for high value items, particularly the laptops, because the committee felt that they were too high. And so we had then decided that we will delegate the ICT steering committee to exercise oversight on amounts spent related to these laptops. As from our inquiries from management, it appears because of the new staff that they're budgeting for and just the value, the issues around supply chains when it comes to business laptops, those warranted the high value that we had noted. And we recommended that the budget for
you can also, Chairperson, if you can also tell us what kind of laptops were those?
Okay, so I can I'll ask the CEO to describe the exact model and dial, but what I do know is that they valued at 29,000 rand per laptop, and the budget took into account 65 new staff members, so that amount was about 103 million rand, which was substantial. But I can ask the CEO or head of internal audit, Mr. Abbey, to help elaborate on that point, if they're on the line.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Greetings to the committee. So, Chair, I think, you know, there's a couple of things that impact on the pricing of laptops, right? One, because the demand for working from home and students needing laptops, and there's a global shortage, I think, of these things. This has driven demand up quite a bit. So it does make it quite expensive. But what we've also realized is that when one purchases a laptop, for example, for 15,000, and you do get those kind of them, they only tend to last you for a year or two, you know. So if you calculate your spend, you're spending about, if you spend 15,000, it's costing you about 7,500 a year. But if you buy probably a more high quality one with better memory, better processing speeds and things like that, they last you for longer. They last you for up to 4 or 5 years, which means then you're only spending 5,000 to 6,000 rand a year. So we have found that sometimes with these elements, it is better to prioritize quality over quantity. But we also did take the audit committee's views on board. And I had tasked the ICT and the supply chain teams to go back to the State Information Technology Agency, which negotiates the prices for these things. And particularly if we are purchasing in bulk, for example, for us to try and get as many discounts as possible for us to be able to save as much as possible on this. Also to say is that we try and push our useful life of our laptops as far as possible. And also where somebody leaves the organization, we try and we keep the laptop and we reassign it inside the organization so we get full value out of it, out of the agency. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll then proceed. So the other point that was highlighted there was the annual procurement plan, which we discussed and recommended that for board approval. If I move on to the next slide, we had revised the audit and risk committee charter as well as the internal audit charter. They were presented to us as a committee and we had recommended those for approval as well. The main changes there were around renaming the audit committee to an audit and risk committee following the merger of the two, but there weren't any other substantial changes. And when it comes to the internal audit operational plan and strategic plan, again, those plans were presented. And then recommending approval to the board, we had requested that the ERP, the new ERP system that's being implemented, that should the findings of that system should accompany the audit report that is shared with the committee, so that we can keep abreast of what's being implemented and the control measures around that, and how the process is unfolding. And next, we had the assurance, combined assurance plan and framework, which were also approved and recommended to the board. If I move on then to the quarterly internal audit reports, there were about four events that were highlighted and that we had discussions on. And the first one was around the payroll review and accounts receivable, where we had an issue with the fact that some of the staff salary advances exceeded the 12-month period that was in line with the financial policy. And we've engaged internal audit on that. And it was a case of it was found based on their report back that there was inconsistencies between the financial policy and the remuneration and benefits policy, which did not necessarily stipulate the time frame. So management could, different business unit management could exercise discretion and not necessarily follow the consistent approach. And so with that, we had requested that we need a full report of advances, and we also need to understand what the punitive measures would be for officials who have decided to go beyond a reasonable period, which is say 24 months, and also with that by June 30th of June 2022 is the implementation date around consistent policy. So the management is currently reviewing that remuneration policy to align it to the financial policy and limit the period to 12 months. If I move on then to customer service review, we realized that the toll-free number was not free, and so our recommendations in providing approval on that front was that we need to find ways to make that line free, and management is currently working on that. I think they've engaged with Vodacom, and so they are looking to report back on that at the end of Q1, end of June. And then if I move on to the procurement review, so this one was also quite contentious in that they had highlighted, management had the internal audit team, that there was no rotational plan and monitoring tool when it comes to awarding work to service providers who are offering legal services. And so with that, and in approving the report, we recommended that management has an action plan on addressing that issue. At this stage, it was we found from the internal audit unit that the supply chain management team will be the ones that will be deciding on which legal firm to use based on normal procurement policy, because prior to that, the legal team could decide which of the, I think there were five suppliers, which of the five suppliers they would use at a particular point in time. So this is something that was prioritized by internal audit to try see how that can be mitigated going forward. Okay. And if I move on to other issues that were found, so with regard to the district and center office reviews, Richards Bay and East London centers were highlighted as regressing in terms of performance. And this was mainly around operational performance, where there was high staff turnover, there was an impact, the centers were impacted heavily by COVID. And so we had approved the report and requested management to have an action plan which will remedy the situation. And so that's also a key item that internal audit will be monitoring in the next quarters. And around financial discipline reviews. So here, the three issues that we had that had been identified were around delay in supplier payments that were beyond 30 days, and this was mainly in the ICT unit, where suppliers would issue an invoice, but issue licensing codes at a later stage beyond the 30 days, so that would cause the delay. And so, in terms of the actual invoicing moving within the agency, there would be delays around that as well. So our recommendation was that there needs to be an enhancement in control measures to mitigate those delays internally and externally, where there aren't delays around licensing codes and there aren't delays around sharing of or confirming the invoices internally between finance and ICT. And the other issue was around reconciling items that weren't cleared since 2018, which we highlighted to management that it was a long time, that this was around leases and an invoice being received from a supplier where the interest was charged when it should not have been charged. And our understanding is that this engagement is still ongoing, and management is looking to clear that within the next quarter. But based on the engagement with the supplier, they will be reversing the interest charge, so there won't be a financial impact on the agency around these amounts. So we expect them to be cleared. And again, with VAT, which was also corrected in March 2022. And the last item was around performance information, which was not consistent. And so this was mainly in the...
Sorry, Chair?
Yes, Chair?
That interest was for which year, 2021?
No, it was for 2018. And it was only between the months of July and August, Chair. So it was kept on the reconciling items list for that long, where management was still engaging the supplier to not to reverse that interest because they should not have charged it. So the issue was the fact that it's been outstanding. The item has been outstanding for quite a while without being resolved.
So now they've resolved it.
So based on what the CEO from our inquiries, it seems they are still engaging the supplier, and it seems the supplier has acknowledged that the interest should not be charged, and Mr. Kasim, you can come in here to confirm. And because of that, although the invoices has not been amended or the formal documentation has not been received, we see it as an ongoing discussion, but from what was confirmed, it seems as though there won't be any impact on the current year financials in terms of any interest having been paid. I think my understanding is that the payments that were made in 2018 excluded that interest. So it was already a dispute where the supplier felt that interest should be charged.
Okay, let's get the CEO to tell us. Have you resolved it, CEO?
Yes, Chairperson, I think we have. So what will happen from time to time is most rental is paid in advance, right? So on the first of the month, or even by the 25th, you'll get an invoice and you must pay it by the first of the month to settle the invoice. Now what will sometimes happen is one might look at the invoice, the finance team might look at it, they might disagree with the utilities charge, it might look excessive or something like that. So you send it back to the service provider and you say, we're unhappy with something. Maybe they charge property management fees incorrectly, something like that. So what might happen is that instead of paying the invoice on the first, because of that query, it takes a week or two for that query to be resolved. And then the invoice ends up being paid by maybe the 14th or the 15th. Now, when you get to the next month, what you'll find is that the landlord then for that two-week delay, which was not caused necessarily by the NYDA, they would have charged an interest amount, right? And if you look at how the PFMA is structured, interest is, of course, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but it only becomes fruitless and wasteful once it's paid, right? So what the NYDA will then do is say, look, you've charged this interest. We cannot pay this interest because it was not a delay on our part. There was a more fundamental issue associated with the invoice. will negotiate with the landlord. The landlord will at most times remove the interest from the invoice. I do believe this was related to an East London building that we've been leasing. I had a personal conversation with the landlord a few weeks ago, and they had committed that they will remove the interest from the invoice or from the statement. So I'm confident that no interest was paid, but also no interest appears on the financial statements as well. Yeah. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And so, yeah, with regard to the last issue, this was around beneficiaries that had benefited from the one of the programs where the KPI target was 10,000 beneficiaries that needed to benefit, and instead of management reporting on 17,000, they actually reported on 19,000. So there was a 2,000 difference that internal audit picked up, and this was then corrected. So the enhancement there is around ensuring that monitoring and evaluation and review is prioritized, and that was the recommendation. Then this was just the dashboard report, which essentially highlighted the new ERP system. And concerns that had been identified were around controls, general controls, and there not being a blueprint document for one to refer to when using the new system. Also around user procedure manuals that weren't also developed. And lastly around security in terms of one-time passwords and multi-factor authentications that have not yet been established for use. So again, we had recommended the report to the board for approval, and we asked management to develop an action plan and report on these in the next quarter. Okay. So when I look at the next slide, these are the policies that we have also recommended to the board for approval. I won't go through each of them unless there are any questions. Those are the enterprise risk management policies and plans. And then we also had the risk management quarterly report. And in the report, it was identified that there were insurance claims that were declined, which as a committee, we felt that it wasn't clear whether there was any remedial action for insurance claims declined due to negligence. And this point goes, it's related to the point on the next slide, which I'll touch on when I get there. But essentially, we did note that the report that is being shared with the committee needs to highlight how much was recovered from officials where negligence was identified. And our understanding is that there are acknowledgement of receipts letters that are signed by the officials when there is negligence that has been assessed and identified by the risk management team. So that's really the recommendation that we were requesting. But overall, it seems that the risks, both strategic and operational risks, are within management's appetite and tolerance levels. So we were comfortable with that. And on the next slide, we highlight the strategic risks that are there. There weren't any changes in those risks, and that our report was recommended for approval again with the board. And just under that, we also have the management and administration of insurance claims. And so, as mentioned, the issue was around safeguarding those negligent issues. We were concerned with the increase in number of laptops that were being stolen. And so it was a case of how do we have a consequence management? And so we have requested that there should be a strengthening in controls around that. And as the reports are shared, we'll be able to monitor how much gets recovered. But overall, there was a profit that was made from the insurance claims for laptops that were stolen and where claims were made to the insurer of about 35,800 rand. Okay, and on this slide, it's mainly around the NYDA still maintaining COVID protocols. We were comfortable that protocols are still being adhered to. And when it comes to ICT and governance, we had recommended to the board approval of the policy. And the main concern around that was around cybersecurity risks. and they're materializing, particularly as it relates to the ERP management system. But we were given assurance that there are currently measures in place. So there has not been a breach that has caused any detrimental impact, both financially and operationally. But we did highlight that as a risk. And on PAPAYA, which is the a Protection of Personal Information Act, so there the discussion was around the implementation thereof and the policies. So our recommendation to management was for them to align the current policies around data protection to PAPAYA and to also focus, which is flagged as part of risk management's key priorities, to ensure that there are processes that are in place around managing of information. So that's also a key item that we expect to see more of in terms of reporting in the next quarter. And then the last slide is around the Auditor General strategy and the fees document for 2022-2023. The key discussion here and concern were around the increase in fees, because we felt that the NYDA is still maintaining a sound control environment. And so the current fees, which I believe will be increasing by 6%, were not necessarily we're a bit excessive, and so although they are in line with inflation, and the engagement there with the AG was that they're not able to implement a 0% increase for the 2022-2023 year. However, they are open to engagement in the next Audit and Risk Committee meeting around how the rate can be reduced going forward. But the current increase needs to match the increase in expenses and procedures on the performance information audit that they will be doing. And then the last issue was around progress on the implementation of the audit action plan. So with regards to the progress there was only one outstanding unresolved issue out of the 11 that were identified. And again, it related to the supplier payments that went beyond 30 days. And so with that, it was agreed that we need to enhance those controls. So at this stage, in terms of the pack that we receive as the audit committee members, management will be highlighting exactly which invoices went beyond the 30 days. But we have confirmed with the CFO that on average, the dates are 30 days. So you do find exceptions here and there. So it's just a case of us monitoring those exceptions. I think I'll conclude there, Chair. And open to questions if there are any.
Thank you. I've been trying to log in with my laptop, but it looks like it has frozen. It has frozen. I'm not sure. So, don't mind me, honorable members, if you don't see me. I'm trying to use my iPad because of this problem, but I'll keep trying. Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe let's get, if there's any addition from your members. Is there any addition from your members? Nothing?
It doesn't seem like there is. Is there anything from your side, Advocate Rosie?
Nothing on my side, Chair. I'm quite satisfied with the submissions you've made to the committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me get hands from honorable members. Any comments, any hands? I see the hand of Honorable Masondo and Honorable Masiko.
Oh, Chair, maybe Honorable Masiko has something to say, but I wanted to say if maybe, how would it be if maybe we load it with the report of the NYDA, then we ask questions from all the reports finished.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Masiko?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to yourself, Honorable Members, and the Board of the NYDA and all officials on the platform. I think, Honorable Chair, I'm going to agree with Honorable Masondo that some of the questions that one wants to ask will be directed to the NYDA itself. But maybe one must commend the progress that has been made in relation to the implementation of the audit action plan by the NYDA, because you can tell that it's yielding great results, though we do have concerns around those minor issues of non-payment or late payment of service providers and some of the issues that she has raised in relation to monitoring the appointment of some service providers, as she had spoken about the legal companies on how there is a concern around that. But maybe most of the questions, Chair, will reserve them for the engagement or the discussion session with the NYDA. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Masiko, electricity is so humble. So, if I get cut off, I will drive to a place where I will get the electricity. If you see me not responding, being quiet, you must know that I'm looking for a place where I will stop. You can continue with the meeting.
Chair, but I'm also at the park, in Acacia Park. We have very bad network coverage. That's why I'm not even turning on my videos, but we will work with whatever we have, Chair.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, over to you, Chairperson of the NYDA. I see a hand on the side of Kaban or Mugosaga Masiko. Masiko, may you please lower your hand? Yeah. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the Honorable Members. I must also just apologize. Let me try to switch my video on. However, my network is a bit unstable. All right. No, thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to present before the Portfolio Committee. Chair, I think in my brief remarks, I would really just want to appraise the committee insofar as the plans for Youth Month, the work that has been done thus far, before I hand over to the CEO, who will be taking the Honorable Members through the presentation. Honorable Members, as you would know, that this year marks the 46th anniversary of June 16 uprising. And as the NYDA, we've really commemorated this month under the theme, you know, promoting sustainable livelihoods and resilience of young people for a better tomorrow. So this year, the Youth Day celebrations will be taking place in Mthatha in the Eastern Cape. And really, just to give the Honorable Members context to this particular Youth Month, you would know that, you know, this particular year, Youth Month takes place at a time when coverage is focused around youth unemployment being at an utmost high. Youth restlessness and despondency is setting in. And so much focus on society's growing distrust in government, as well as youth's loss of faith in government interventions, means that society really remains hostile to the work of government insofar as supporting youth development is concerned. Now, this year, Honorable Members, we have really made a clarion call to young people, and the 2022 call to action is to really encourage young people to continue with the theme that has been that I've just outlined. And inculcating this is really to forge the resilience and pursue opportunities for a sustainable livelihood today as well as in the future. Now, Honorable Members, we did open the Youth Month last week, Thursday, and the intention of opening Youth Month was to launch Youth Month, as I've alluded to, at Morris Isaacson High School. And it was really to acknowledge the month as well as to lay out to young people the anticipated activities for the month of June. The calendar for Youth Month was provided at the launch as well as it being uploaded on our website. Now, the day also served as an opportunity for the nominations for the 2022 Trailblazers. Now, these are among the youth or young people who are playing an important role in the different sectors of our society, who are contributing to the progressive transformation of our country as well as society at large. Now, we launched the annual Trailblazers campaign, which aims to celebrate and profile ordinary young people who are doing extraordinary work against the backdrop of unemployment, inequality, crime, climate change, as well as most recently the various impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, what we'll be doing during the month of June is each week we have identified a thematic area wherein young people can engage us on the various opportunities that present themselves. So the first week, we've themed it under youth entrepreneurship. And really under this week or the first week, we'll be looking at, engaging young people on how they can start their own enterprises. We'll have your various stakeholders, your sister classes that are aimed at raising funding for youth in businesses. So that's week one. And then week two, we've themed it a jobs program. That will be the thematic area for that particular week. And within that week, we'll be looking at what are the roles that CETUS can play insofar as accessing job opportunities for young people. We'll be taking young people through how they can register on the SAYouth.mobi platform, as well as our ERP system. Week three has been themed career programs, and in this particular week, we will be taking young people through how they can access, you know, second chance matric rewrite programs, how can they best prepare themselves for life post-matric, as well as, you know, leveraging on your partnerships such as your NSFAS, as well as the Department of Higher Education and Training. And then lastly, honorable members, the last theme for Youth Month, we have themed it under the National Youth Service. And in this particular theme, we really want to encourage young people to go out into their various communities, particularly with a focus on KZN as well as Eastern Cape, as you know, the provinces would have been affected by the recent floods. So in that particular week, young people will be providing the necessary services to those communities. We'll be taking young people through how they can register on the National Youth Program, as well as young people who have a keen interest in establishing nonprofit organizations. And then towards the end of the month, there will be a handover of an ECD center in Mpumalanga, as well as a crime prevention in Daba that will be established in collaboration with the South African Police Service. Now, just end off, honorable members, all our... yes, Chair?
I hear you are saying in your program, you'll be having... you are also going to help young people to open up, to establish their own NGOs and MPOs. To focus on what? Because, you see, we have many NPOs and NGOs, but we've been trying to check most of them with Kashifa on what is it that they are doing. So the ones that you're going to encourage young people to establish, they'll be what is your main focus in those ones? Rather than us having NGOs and NPOs that we don't even know what are they doing, especially for young people. You know, I will be happy if you are going to encourage young people to have NPOs that will be having programs that are in line with fourth industrial revolution. you know, so that there we can see that Nina, we are focusing on exploring talent, you know, from young people, you know, rather than us having, say, I'm an NGOs. Nina, you must be, your NGOs must be different from the NGOs that we have. We have NGOs that are not pro-government, who are always fighting government. And if you can just share with us what will be your focus areas in terms of those NGOs establishments.
Yes. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So really the focus here on these particular NGOs or NPOs would be, you know, in the spirit of getting, you know, young people to be more involved in service work with a particular focus on youth development. So if there's a young person who has an NPO that is skilling and or upskilling young people in the areas of fourth industrial revolution or whatsoever, you know, those, that will be the particular focus for those NPOs. But it won't just be assisting young people to establish NPOs, but where young people have already established NPOs, ours will be to also provide the assistance through your Department of Social Development, insofar as, you know, how can they leverage off, you know, the opportunities, the funding through the other departments that exist or that deal directly with areas of NPOs. So your Department of Social Development will be one of the stakeholders that will be bringing on board insofar as, you know, those NPOs are concerned. And then lastly, honorable members, it's really just to emphasize or underscore this point that all our programs throughout, not just the month of June, but going forward, will have a gendered as well as, you know, disability element attached to them. We want to ensure that there's no young person that is left behind, and that, you know, where we've got all our programs and initiatives that we are driving, that we take everyone on board. So those are just my remarks, honorable members, and just to appraise the committee as to what it is that we have, the NYDA has planned for Youth Month. But if the chair allows, I will hand over to the CEO, who will be taking the honorable members through that particular presentation. Thank you very much, honorable chair.
I thought that in your June program, you'll be also working on assisting those projects that we visited, which have failed, so that at least Niyazivusa asanda. I need to they are dead. Niyazivusa. So I think this is an opportunity that you must not miss as young people, that in June month, here in your program, you've got tangible results. Because listening to what you are presenting right now, it's like in some of your programs, I don't see them being an action thing, but I see them as a talk show. You know, I don't like talk shows. And I'm sure even honorable members will agree with me. We don't want talk shows, but we want you to be a different board that produces results. So we thought that we are going to take this opportunity to programatize the things that we have done when we were doing oversight, and you do your utmost best in ensuring that all those projects, you revise them. Yes, you can respond, Chair. Because I don't like talking.
Yes, no, thank you very much. No, definitely, Honourable Chair, and I can really attest that there will be no talk shows this year. In fact, immediately following from, you know, the oversight visits that the Portfolio Committee did undertake, there has been a commitment from the relevant respective branches to follow up on the comments that has been made or that was made by the Honourable Members. You'd remember there was, you know, there were particular beneficiaries that would have needed our immediate intervention in Ekuruleni, in Katlehong, as well as the young lady who owns the laundry.
Net.
Yes. So that work has commenced, as well as the gentleman from Rustenburg, who owns the steel producing company, insofar as, you know, upscaling and increasing or creating or assisting him with the necessary market linkage so that he can expand his business. So those are just the two of the beneficiaries that we did visit, and work has commenced to ensure that those particular beneficiaries get the necessary assistance over and beyond Youth Month.
Thank you very much for that update. Thank you, Chair.
Chair.
MPT.
Thank you very much, Chair, and very good morning to Honourable Members as well as the NYDA Board and also the officials and our staff. Chair, just a quick question. I'm just trying to find the program for the NYDA for Youth Month, and I know that the Chairperson had said that the program is on the website. So I just quickly went on the website now quickly, and I'm struggling to find it. Can she just indicate where exactly it is, or can it be sent to us, please? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Pity, can the CEO send that program to us for June month?
Yes, Chair, I'll do it immediately now, and I'll post the link to the website as well. Yeah.
Okay. Over to you, CEO.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Perhaps while I'm just getting my presentation up, I can ask the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Kutase Mbetsi, just to introduce herself to the committee.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. And the board of NYDA and colleagues. My name is Kutase Mbetsi. I joined NYDA a few weeks ago, and I'm excited to be part of this young organization for young people, and I look forward to working with you all. Thank you.
Mm. Congratulations, young woman.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Yeah. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. This is then the presentation of the NYDA to the Portfolio Committee based on our quarter four 2021-2022. In the course of the presentation, we'll take members through the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, the quarterly performance report, the quarterly financial report, the update on human resources, the recommendations from the BRR. And then we've also, I know members have been asking on an ongoing basis for the monitoring and evaluation on the NYDA grant program. That is also included in the pack and will be presented during the course of today. If we look at the context in which we deliver this presentation today, last week we received the quarter one 2022 quarterly labor force survey. And what we saw is a marginal drop in the unemployment rate as well as the youth unemployment rate. If we look at it, there's about 5.1 million young people who are in employment, and that increased by 250,000 from the last quarter. It's also the first time since the start of the pandemic where there's been two consecutive periods in which youth employment has increased. However, it is important to note that youth employment is nowhere where we were pre-pandemic and that our recovery still remains slow.
If we look at sector-specific, community, social and personal services accounts for the majority of our employment gains. While it is difficult to confirm for sure, this could be shaped by, for example, programs such as the Department of Basic Education Teacher Assistant Program. And this suggests that we should continue to have this as an area of investment to ensure that opportunities and wage gains are sustained. Also, if we look at quarter number one, we always expect an increase in unemployment because the end of the December season means a reduction in retail, in tourism and hospitality. And because there is an entry of new young people who have completed school entering the labor market. We also know that we are perhaps seeing improvements because DASSSA has returned to face-to-face surveys. The telephone surveys were providing very low response rates. Even with all of these better figures, we still have 1.5 million less working people than before the pandemic. And it is too soon to suggest that our strategies, such as the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, are working. However, we will continue to monitor further quarters. I think only if we see four consecutive quarters of growth will we start to feel better. In terms of the board has held two ordinary meetings in the quarter at the end of January and then at the end of March. Our last board meeting was conducted in KwaZulu-Natal. The board has used the opportunity to offer relief programs to youth-headed households who are affected by the recent floods. The board also utilized the opportunity to meet with young people who are in training for the revitalized National Youth Service and to conduct oversight on the program. And I think that it would also be good, given that this has now grown to be the biggest program of the NYDA, also be good for the portfolio committee at some point to do oversight on the National Youth Service program. As the chair highlighted, we've started the Youth Month program, and really the focus is not on talking, but on highlighting the opportunities available to young people. All our research indicates that young people are most responsive when there are opportunities available to them. We concluded the Integrated Youth Development Summit. Just some of the outcomes from there, or the objectives from there, is that the IYDS continues to provide a practical blueprint for the implementation of the National Youth Policy. It is the document which contains the youth commitments over the medium-term strategic framework. The sector themselves said that they would have wanted an annual progress report on the implementation of the youth policy and the IYDS. It allows us to look at progress irrespective of whether that progress is positive or regressive in nature. It allows us to look at government policy across all the thematic areas of youth development. In many ways, it feeds into our strategy to position the NYDA as thought leaders on youth development. It also allows us to position ourselves to different investors so we can continue raising funding for youth development. If we look at the progress on the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, which is a state of the nation commitment of the president, we are now in phase number three of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. Very much so, when we look at its implementation, we see it as a partnership approach, one that incorporates government, the private sector and civil society. But even the spread across government is the implementation lies across the Department of Employment and Labor, the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, the Department of Higher Education and Training, and the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. If we look at our progress update, this is actually not my colors, it's the colors that come from the presidency, but the presidency is quite impressed that the NYDA's program is performing probably the best to date out of all of the programs. If we look at the revitalized National Youth Service, we've got a budget of 591 million. Our target is 50,000 opportunities. And by the time this report was presented, 15,000 young people were already placed in opportunities, with us targeting the remainder of the 35,000 to be placed before the end of Youth Month. If you look at the National Pathway Management Network, that has a budget of about 543 million. Its target is 660,000 young people, of which 165,000 must be placed. And the progress is 612,000 young people who are placed. There were some challenges with funds that were not rolled over by the Department of Employment and Labor. But I believe there is a process between the presidency, employment and labor, and National Treasury to resolve that. The third is demand-led skilling. The lead department is the Department of Higher Education and Training and the National Skills Fund. That has a budget of 400 million. It's about 8,000 young people trained and placed in employment. Unfortunately, the first request for proposals did not result in an training providers being appointed, and the process had to be rerun. But fortunately, the funds have not been lost, and I think the department is quite close to making an appointment of a training provider for those 8,000 opportunities. In terms of local ecosystems and fixing the ecosystems around youth entrepreneurship, the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition did not receive funding for this program, but are in a process with National Treasury to be able to raise funding for the program. If we look at the employment stimulus, overall, in phase number two, we are 306,000 opportunities have been created, and of those, 85% have been allocated to youth, 63% to women. The Social Employment Fund was opened by Minister Patel on the 26th of May. It's contributing to almost 50,000 jobs, and the majority of those are to youth. It has the potential for about 300,000 jobs, and just shows the capacity for us to be able to create employment opportunities, even if it is from a government perspective. Some of the key programs, the Municipal Infrastructure Agency is running a program around waste. They have employed 7,600 local participants. The program has benefited 32 local SMMEs, and almost 11,000 of waste, which is recovered and rerouted to recyclable materials. There's also training of ward peer educators on waste management. This is assisting with the clearing of illegal dumping spots. It's focusing on municipal cleanup campaigns. It's extending access to solid waste management services. And it's also collecting important data around waste management practices. The DSI Water Graduates Program is creating pathways into employment for graduate programs. Here's just one example of Bongeka Sitole, who's a water graduate employment program. She's learned how to analyze water samples, learn about wastewater treatment, create clean water that is safe. And this is allowing her to understand how important integrated environmental management space is here. And it allows many graduates to bring their theoretical experience and practicalize that experience. If we move into the detail of the NYDA's performance for the quarter under review, under Program 1, we have three programs: Program 1, Administration; Program 2, Design, Delivery and Development; and 3, which is Integrated Youth Development. If we look at overall, the NYDA, as the Audit Committee Chair would have indicated, we had 22 key performance indicators. They have all been met, and in some cases met and exceeded. If we go through the detail under Program 1, which is Administration, the outcome is an effective agency which is characterized by good corporate governance and ethical leadership. The target was for the number of quarterly management reports was 4, and we had achieved those 4 reports. In regards to implementing an annual workplace skills plan, we've reviewed and implemented the annual workplace skills plan for our staff members from a human resources perspective. In terms of the value of funds sourced from public and private sectors, our target was 70 million. We achieved quite a bit higher than that, 683 million. But that's mainly because the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention of 430 million really contributed to a massive overachievement. And I think we look across the targets, it is the only target that was way overachieved during the year. The number of CETA partnerships which were established, we had a target of 6. We've achieved 6. In the number of partnerships signed with technology companies, we had a target of 2. We've achieved 2. In terms of reviewing and implementing the ICT strategic plan, indicating 50% of achievements, that target has been achieved. The integrated communications and marketing strategy has been reviewed and implemented. The strategic risk register was produced and approved by the Operations Executive Committee. The annual supply chain management procurement plan has been reviewed and quarterly reports have been produced. We've produced the annual report on partnerships with disability organizations. The ERP modules have been designed and implemented in all NYDA programs. We move to program two, which is where all of our operations targets align. Colleagues or members of the committee will remember that our original target for number of youth-owned enterprises supported with financial interventions was 1,000. We received additional funding to do another 1,000, and it was quite a stretch target. The team had to push themselves because that funding came through quite late in the year. But we're happy to say that we achieved 2,007, and we also received additional support from the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Social Development, which is looking to transition young people who are in families from social grants into establishing their own enterprises. We look at the number of youth supported with non-financial business development interventions. Our target was 20,000. We achieved 21,276. In the number of jobs created and sustained through supporting entrepreneurs, our target was 6,000. We achieved close to 7,900. Of course, during the year, we became a partner on the National Pathway Management Network, SAYouth.mobi, and the target was to produce an analytical report on the job placements that were facilitated, which would then give us a baseline on what we could target on this program for future financial years. In the number of young people capacitated with skills to enter the job market, our target was 50,000. We achieved 54,000. We move into the National Youth Service Program. The number of organizations and departments lobbied to implement youth service, our target was 40, we achieved 59. We've produced the annual report on national youth service. And if we look at the number of young people who are participating in NYS expanded volunteer projects, that was another target that was extended based on the additional funding that we received. The original target was 10,000, it was extended to 30,000, we achieved 33,500. In terms of some of the statistics, out of our grants that we've issued, 1,002 was to females, 1,005 was to males, 40 was to persons with disabilities. If we look at the age beneficiaries, it's pretty much consistent, 27% between the ages of 20 to 25, 34% between the ages of 26 to 30, 31 to 35 is 39% of the program. That just gives a sense of the sectors between services, engineering, agriculture, manufacturing, media, retail, sports, arts and culture, health, construction, education and ICT. And there's a fairly strong spread across all of the different economic sectors. If we look at spatial distribution, KwaZulu-Natal through that partnership with the Department of Social Development leads, but we see strong or consistent numbers across all of our provinces, with no province lagging too far behind. In terms of jobs created and sustained, 53% towards males, 47% towards females. In terms of jobs created and sustained in terms of age, the majority lie in the 26 to 30 age group, followed by 18 to 25 age group, and then the 31 to 35 age group. Gauteng, as the lead economic province, has more beneficiaries on jobs created and sustained, and they are followed then by KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga. In terms of our non-financial services, we have six groups of non-financial services. One is the business management training program, which is probably the most keen program that is taken up by young people. Second is the mentorship program, which provides business mentorship support. And of course, there we've taken into account the comments of the portfolio committee around quality of the mentors that we allocate. Three is the market linkages program, and that assists young entrepreneurs to access business and related opportunities. Four is cooperative governance, which assists young people who want to start up their own cooperative. Five is sales pitch, which assists young entrepreneurs with the skills to plan, prepare, and present their business ideas. And lastly, we have broad-based Black economic empowerment, which provides young entrepreneurs with knowledge of what BBBEE policy and frameworks are in South Africa, and the various benefits and the codes which they can access to support their business through enterprise supply development and through preferential procurement. This is just a breakdown of our business management training, which is pretty consistent across most of the provinces. Western Cape and Free State are lagging behind, but we are providing support to those provinces to get their numbers up in future years. In terms of young people capacitated with skills to enter the job market, 58% is towards life skills, 42% is towards job readiness. Once again, there's a distribution of the provinces. There are provinces which are lagging behind. That is because they had a shortage of some degree of trainers through the recruitment or the approved recruitment strategy. We will be filling those trainer posts, and that will assist those provinces in starting to get their numbers up on the jobs training programs. In terms of integrated youth development, during the year under review, we aim to conduct four impact evaluations. We aim to do two impact evaluations. We did four. We found some additional budget to conduct two additional evaluation studies. We produced the annual report on the integrated youth development strategy. The number of youth status outlooks reports, we've produced three. And we've also produced a discussion document on youth development in the country. In terms of youth with disabilities, we continue to implement strategy. We continue to build awareness amongst young persons with disabilities and link them to products and services of the NYDA. We've dedicated disability champions in each branch who are being trained on disability. We are creating an enabling environment that will promote the full participation of youth with disabilities. We are on an ongoing basis looking at identifying and eliminating barriers to participation. We are establishing partnerships with internal and external stakeholders that are capable and qualified in terms of advancing development of youth with disabilities. Of course, to drive accountability, we're producing the annual report on partnerships with disability organizations. We've set aside capital budget to upgrade facilities for access with youth with disabilities. We've set aside budget for printing of training manuals in Braille, as well as sign language interpreters. And the board will also allocate specific quantitative targets on all programs with youth, for youth with disabilities, but at no less than 7% of our targets. In the human resources space, we finalized the recruitment process of our interns, and they are due to commence with us on the 1st of June. We're also recruiting for an additional 24 posts in the organization. We are advertising those posts in line with our employment equity plan, and we will continue to give preference in HR to young people under the age of 35. Currently, where we are, the vacancy rate is about 17%, but once the recruitment is completed for all of these positions, our projected vacancy rate is 3.7%. Chair, I'll just pause there for now and allow the CFO to take us through the financial part of the presentation.
Thank you, CEO. So I will just give the brief summary around financial performance for the current financial year. CEO, please just scroll for me up. So for FY 2021-FY 2022, the approved budget was 507 million. And during September, there was a reallocation of 430 million that the National Treasury provided to NYDA, which amounted to the total budgeted revenue for the entity being 1.1 billion. And in quarter four, the revenue from the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities amounted to 901 million, which makes up majority of the part of the entity's revenue that was recognized for the year. And in quarter four, 400 million was allocated for the special project for PYEI. I think it has become a common name around NYDA now. And this project also got a special allocation of 50 million as an additional allocation for the Youth Enterprise Fund, totaling to a total of 901 million coming from the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. The total spend for the whole year, and particularly that was accumulated at quarter four, was 947 million. Which equates to 97% against a budget of 99% against the revenue of 954 million. 420 million relates to capital and project commitments, and capital commitments of 24 million are made up of computer equipment, vehicles, and office furniture. This is something that aligns with what the audit committee would have also spoken to earlier on. While 396 million of our contractual commitment relates to the execution of the PYEI project, which still needs to be implemented in the current financial year, because those funds are still sitting in our account as of the end of the year at 31 March, it had not yet been utilized, so it still needs to be used. We have employee costs of 102% compared to the budget. And the reason for this is because there's a non-cash portion that relates to the provision that has been made for leave and performance bonuses. And this payment will only be made subsequent to year end and after audits have been done and when the board sits and approves the approval of the performance bonuses in line with the targets that we set. We have donor funding expenditure, which is at least 78% of the annual budget. And the delay in utilizing this donor fund or it being utilized with expenditure is due to the delays with the implementation because of contract finalization with the donors that took place quite late before year end. Then we have jobs program, which resulted in an underspend in relation to the community works program. This happened due to the National Treasury procurement process, and the COGTA, which couldn't secure approval from National Treasury for procurement to proceed during the period of suspension. Moving to the next slide, which the CEO will move for me. Thank you. So COVID, the expenditure for the quarter four was only 93,000. This relates to administration costs, and in line with previous quarters, we do not have any irregular expenditure or any fruitless or wasteful expenditure in quarter four. There were no financial misconduct cases to report as well. And the Auditor General is currently busy. They're sitting in the boardroom next to me. They're currently auditing our financial results. We submitted our unaudited financial statements on the 31st of March of April last month in line with the deadlines that they had given us. And in terms of the audit management letter, the audit action plan was developed to address the findings that were raised in the management letter. And by the end of quarter four, out of the 11 findings, there were only six that were outstanding. The five relates is still in progress. So let me read that again. Six out of 11 findings were resolved and five were still in progress. So I will go now to the breakdown of the detail revenue analysis, looking at the budget versus actual for quarter four and overall what the total for the year is. So for the transfer payments that we got from the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities for quarter four, we were allocated or received 470 million. And across budget, we were able to then have 100% of that revenue recognized. We also have interest income in quarter four of 4.5 million. And then I will move to additional grants from the Presidential Youth Employment Fund. We got 430 million. This portion is what is still remaining at year end as what was most likely not utilized because we received the funds only after Feb in the last quarter. So that's why the funds are still in our books. Then we have the project management fees, which in quarter four, we received 1.4 million. Overall revenue that we obtained as the organization is 954 million from the department, because overall we ended up with 1.1 billion. Next slide, I will go into the breakdown of expenditure per programs that we have. We have administration fees, and which in quarter four we spent 66 million, and the actual that was budgeted was 66, so we were in line with budget. We also have economic participation that was 98%. The actual is 98% of what was budgeted. We have costs relating to the integrated youth development. We utilized 100% of what was budgeted. Then for jobs, we spent only 44% of what was budgeted. We spent 19 million of the 44 million, and the reason was quality basic education and decent employment through inclusive economy. This was not yet utilized and will be used in the current financial year. Then we had expenditure expenditure of 100% utilized for NYS in executing the National Youth Services Programs. In total, in quarter four, we spent 714 million out of 763 million, which is 94%. Coming to the employee cost, which is what makes up some of the costs in the organization, which is salaries, we had budgeted 196 million for salaries, and the actual is 199. And like I said, we are 102%, so we are 2% over what was budgeted. And the reason for that is non-cash items relating to the provision for leave and bonuses, which is non-cash. Then we have capital expenditure that was incurred. We had budgeted 34 million and we used 101%. So we were just slightly over, and the reason aligns with the requirements that the organization had. Now moving to additional expenditures, the majority of our cost is 61 million, sorry, for administration and overheads. This aligns with the budget. ICT is one of our costs that relates to IT and so forth, and with the number of employees, this cost has done sufficiently well compared to prior year, and that's why we only spent 74% of what was budgeted. The budgeted fee for the audit that is commencing was 6.4 million, but through the process of negotiating and so forth for AG, the amount has resulted to us being liable to pay 6.7 million for this current audit. And then I will skim through the costs and to only explain the ones where we did over. Then we have grant and voucher disbursements, where we did 107% against what was budgeted. This is in line with executing the project for grants and granting vouchers to the youth. So hence why this was an approval that was then processed against what was budgeted. Then we have transfer, payments, jobs fund. This was 100% against what was budgeted for 400 million. And then we have employee costs, again, the detail of 102% coming up again. So now coming to the donor funding expenditure, and if I'm too quick, please do let me know. Coming to donor funding expenditure, the partner, I will name the names of the partners and the spend that attribute to that. So ETDP CETA, they gave us an adjusted revised budget of 109 million. The funds have not yet been used, and it's planned to be used for internship programs. So this will be, so all the funds that have not yet been used is part of the process that we will apply to National Treasury to ensure that we are able to make use of this fund in the current financial year. And like the AuditCom chair highlighted, we are planning on indeed requesting for that, and we have no doubt that we will get the permission to use those funds, because it is also an approved project which the presidency and the department and all of us in this committee are still in support for. So we know that we will get that approval. So NYS Flemish donor funding gave us a revised budget of 1.4 million, and we've only utilized 595 million of that, and then 595,000, sorry. Then the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture budgeted 13 million. We've used the full amount and more. Then we have services, CETA gave us 12 million. We've used most of it. Department of Corporate Governance, 33 million. We've used the majority of it for Community Works Program. And then we have Industrial Development Corporation, where we received 1 million. The funds have not been utilized. It relates to Enterprise Development Voucher Programs. So you will understand this, because there's still, we had a commitment at the end of the year, which is quite significant. We have already committed to the project. It's just the payment or the spend of the funds have not yet gone out. So please, when I say spend is zero, it doesn't mean it won't be utilized, or it doesn't have any use. It's already allocated to projects. It's just that the spending of the money or the payment of the suppliers has not been done, because the process hasn't been finalized. Then we have Telkom that gave us 2 million, and we utilized the 2 million for training and development. Then we have KZN DSD that gave us 479,000, and we've utilized 462 of that for enterprise development and grants and programs. Overall, we received 66 million from donor funds, partners, and of that amount, what was spent by the time of year end was 51 million. So coming to the detail of what made up the 93,000 for COVID, we have sanitizers, total amount of 20,000. And then sanitizer without alcohol. I don't know if it's 70% with alcohol, but the breakdown of the sanitizers that were acquired resulted in the quantities that we see there and the price of the 92,000. And this relates to quarter four COVID expenditures. Then we have the upgraded progress on audit plan action as at 31 March. We've already highlighted that out of the 11 findings that we had, we have resolved six. Five of it related to annual financial statements and the one related to annual performance reports. Those have been resolved. And the five that are still outstanding, four relates to IT systems, which is the ERP system, which the CEO would have spoken about, and HR management, which is one item. So overall, only five of what was highlighted is still outstanding and in progress of being resolved. The detail of what those findings were, the findings that were resolved, this is further information. And HR-related vacancy, the agency underwent a migration process and revised the organogram and positions, therefore. And therefore, that is why we have the vacancy rate that the 17% that the CEO alluded to. And the IT system, the new ERP system has been designed and configured, and the audit findings are being addressed. With that, I think that concludes the financial report. Thank you all.
Thanks, Kuti. Chair, I'll move into the BRRs and the recommendations. In terms of recommendations, the NYDA should examine its targets and consider setting higher targets. When we presented the APP to the committee in May, we tried to show the fundamental increase in targets, not only for the NYDA, but also across government. Negative perceptions, we have committed to a strike session with the NYDA comms unit and also to being available to hear and resolve young people's grievances. In terms of the employment tax incentives, we announced amendments to the ETI to increase its update. NYD will continue to monitor the progress of the increased uptake on ETI and provide feedback. Comprehensive report of the ICT audit of equipment, we will provide that in quarter one, 2022-2023. Focus on determining impact of its programs in short, medium, and long term. Today we will present the outcome of wave four of our grant program assessment. For the year ahead, we are planning for wave five of the grant program assessment. We're also planning an assessment on the Youth Micro Enterprise Relief Fund, the Community Works Program, and the Revitalized National Youth Service. We submitted comments on the draft preferential procurement regulations. National Treasury is the custodian of government spend per vulnerable group, and we are working with the department to obtain this information and present it to the committee on a quarterly basis. We are also working with provinces who have not yet implemented youth funds. So Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape all have their own youth funds. We are working with the other six provinces to look at how they can go about establishing and at least matching the funding of the NYDA. We are continuing to work with departments and provinces on establishing office space for young entrepreneurs, but also to indicate that the mandate for incubators lies with CEDA, and we will continue to collaborate with them at a national and a regional level. In terms of capacitating youth with skills and enabling market linkages, all of our business development advisors have been tasked in their performance agreements with establishing regional market linkages, and it's something we'll be focusing on during Youth Month as well. Greater access to network data, the release of spectrum should start to reduce the cost of data in South Africa. The Department of Communications has also released its plan to provide households with especially marginalized and vulnerable households with free Wi-Fi in the next 3 years. and we will work with the department to ensure that youth is prioritized in that program. We continue to collaborate with the Yes for Youth initiative under the banner of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. The NYDA, the Harambee Youth Employment Accelerator, and the Youth Employment Service are collaborating together with a number of civil society, private sector, and government institutions to reduce duplication and to amplify impact. We've planned to do a both a formative and a summative evaluation on the National Youth Service Program. We've also identified a clear skills component in the program, and we've also asked the implementing agents to ensure, we've set them targets to ensure that there's pathways to sustainable opportunities for young people. Chair, I want to please hand over to our colleagues from Red Flank, who will give us a presentation of their findings on the impact evaluation of the 1,000 grants that were issued by the NYDA. I think it will be a rally from the Red Flank who will present. These impact evaluations are independently done so as to protect any bias that the NYDA might have towards the implementation of its own program. Let me just hand over.
Thank you so much for that. If I share the slides on my side?
I'm not sure if you are a host. Let me see.
You said who's going to present?
Her name is Rayleigh. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Rayleigh Motala.
All right.
Rayleigh Motala. I don't think you're a host. And Elisa, are you able to make Rayleigh a host? Okay, there we go. All right, thanks.
All right, just want to check that everyone can see my screen at the moment. Yes, we can, right? All right, thanks so much. Good morning, colleagues. Thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Jodie McCullough, and I'm a consultant from a specialist consultancy called Red Flank Solutions. And I'm joined today by my colleague, Jessica Pellet, and we will be presenting the results from our impact evaluation on the 1,000 grants issued in 100 days. I am just having connectivity issues, so while I'm presenting, I'm just going to switch my camera off to alleviate the bandwidth issues. If my audio does drop at any point in time, please just let me know. Right, so to go right in, just a point of discussion very quickly, I'll recap on the project objectives of the evaluation. I'll go through the summary evaluation findings. We'll have a look at the impact of COVID-19 and the civil unrest. And then we'll have a look at the cost-benefit analysis and end off with the key findings and recommendations. So just in terms of the project objectives and focus, the NYDA launched its 1,000 Youth-Owned Enterprises in 100 Days program in 2020, and the agency, in conjunction with the Department of Small Business Development, embarked on this recruitment drive to fund 1,000 young entrepreneurs in South Africa. So the program is designed to provide these entrepreneurs with an opportunity to access both the financial and non-financial business development support to establish their businesses. So what we looked at for the evaluation is the impact of this program on the recipients, both positive and negative, and we also looked into the return on investments that was derived by NYDA on the program. We look at whether there's a sound business case for this program, the impact of COVID-19, as I mentioned, the extent of damage caused by the looting, and then overall to have a look at the effectiveness of this initiative in addressing the needs of the youth entrepreneurs in South Africa. So on this slide, I have the evaluation summary. So for the evaluation, we used an internationally recognized DAC criteria, which is defined by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, for measuring the success of development programs and projects such as this one. And the five elements of this criteria are relevance, efficiency, effectiveness, impact, and sustainability.
So how we represent the results here is by use of a color coding system, which is the traffic lights that you see on the right-hand side. So we basically map it to measure not met, partially met, met, and exemplary from lowest to highest. So if you have a look at relevance, the program was assessed as exemplary, meaning that the beneficiaries responded very positively and that the program was well-suited to their needs and their priorities. If we have a look at efficiency, which measures inputs and activities, efficiency was rated as partially met, meaning that you know, efficiency is a measure of whether the most efficient process is being adopted for the program or the project. So that's partially met, meaning that it is partially efficient, but there is room for improvement, which we touch on in our recommendations. When we look at effectiveness, we look at the extent to which the project attains its objectives. So here we look at outputs and outcomes, and this was rated as met, meaning that you know, the project or the program is effective, it is meeting, and it is attaining its objectives, but it's not exemplary, so there is a bit of room for improvement there, but it is doing fine. And then we have impact, so we're measuring the overall impact of the program on the beneficiaries, which is rated as exemplary. And then lastly, we have sustainability, which measures the extent to which the benefits of the program are likely to continue even after the funding was withdrawn. And that was also rated as exemplary, meaning that the program is doing very well in that regard. So if I just move on to the next slide. So here we just have the results chain. So for our evaluation, we use as a point of reference the results chain. And what this is, it's just a mapping which describes the process where specific activities are conducted, converted from inputs and activities to outputs, which are then translated to outcomes, the immediate, intermediate, and final outcomes, and lastly leads over to impacts. And as I mentioned, we use heat maps with the traffic light system, where the colors indicate the extent to which the results were realized. And we do an analysis of quantifiable data, both in primary data, and it's based on the percentage of positive responses received from stakeholders for each of the components. So here on this slide, we've just flowed into the results chain. In the activity level, there are an array of activities that we have mapped in the results chain, but for the purposes of this presentation and just in terms of time, we just zoned into the ones that require particular attention for the activities. And these five I'll go into a bit more detail here, but just to have a high-level view of what we really looked at here to determine the program efficiency for this particular program. So here I'm just going to go into a bit of detail, some comments that we received from the grant beneficiaries, which highlight, you know, some key findings. So here in terms of the output, this beneficiary was just noting that everything was good. However, it would be great if NYDA would make it compulsory for all beneficiaries to go through the program. This program really helps with business sustainability and being able to manage the various elements of their business. And they would also like to see people doing regular checks on the business and really helping those beneficiaries. But ultimately, the outputs were measured as efficient. If we have a look at the activities, so as I mentioned, we zoned in on the ones that require particular attention. So if we look here, we have some examples. We have a look at activity in the program, one beneficiary saying that, you know, they would like to see improved communication with regards to how the process works and what is expected from them, and improving the grant application process as a whole. So that's where that room for improvement comes in. Also in terms of the processing, it was noted that sometimes the payments are a bit delayed, and there are a couple of structures that it needs to go through to get it paid, to get it paid out, which does take some time and does cause some delays. If we look, you know, what requires attention, the outcomes, we look at the grant money, some beneficiaries indicating that it wasn't really sufficient, and that, you know, we need to consider other aspects of the business when it comes to funding, So they struggle to fund operational costs. But we do know that, you know, funding operational costs is a bit of a sticky one. We don't want to be disbursing funds directly, and I'll touch on that in the recommendations as well. So just to provide a recap and an overview on the field research that was undertaken for this program. So we made use of online surveys so that we could reach beneficiaries far and wide. We also did interviews and focus groups. And here we did 195 surveys. We did 16 interviews and we had two focus groups with a total of 26 attendees. So overall, we conducted 237 consultations, and this did give us the representativity that we needed, and really informed our key findings and recommendations very well. On this slide, it's just a dashboard on the profile of these beneficiaries. So in terms of their race, their age, the gender, we also looked into the business structure of the respondents. So whether they were a company, a closed corp, a sole proprietor, or a cooperative. And then we've mapped out here the overview of the grants provided in rand value. So here we see that, you know, majority, 80% of the grants that were provided were between 20 and 50,000 rand. We also looked at the disability profile of the beneficiaries, 4% of which indicated that they were disabled. In terms of the geographical profile, so the spread across South Africa, we've mapped that in the bottom left in the map there. I'm sure they will be sharing this presentation with you if they haven't already. So just to have a look at how the spread was geographically of where the grants were dispersed. And then we also had a look at the sectors as well to see which sectors came through, where beneficiaries were in terms of sectors, to see which sectors were funded and if we could draw any insights on that. So that's this slide. If we look at the impacts of the business management training, which is a key non-financial element of this program, we have here the key findings, and then we've also indicated a couple of extracts of what grant beneficiaries had to say in our field research. So the beneficiaries really commended the NYDA on this support that were provided. You know, they said that it equipped them with useful skills that they are able to use in the long term, which shows why the sustainability of the program was rated as exemplary. The training also had a positive impact in that it equipped them with useful skills that they can provide, that they can apply practically in their day-to-day business. Some of these skills included understanding the business requirements and regulations, such as business registration with CIPC, tax compliance, and so forth. It also helped them with business planning and management, conducting market research, leadership, etc. So overall, the beneficiaries were really happy with this. It was also noted that the facilitators of this training in this program were really well prepared, which also enhanced the training. And overall, they did mention one element that they would like to see improved next time is that they might benefit more from a longer training period. So the average training here was about a week. So beneficiaries did note that if it was a bit longer, it might be a bit more beneficial. But overall here, we see that beneficiaries were really happy. The business management training is a key element of this program and should definitely continue in future iterations. Then we'll move over to the impact of COVID and the civil unrest. So as I mentioned, one of our objectives was to understand what the impact of COVID and the civil unrest was on these beneficiaries and the impacts that they experienced during these times. And here we just have a summary of our results. You know, about half of beneficiaries closing temporarily and 7% closing permanently. In terms of the sector split, we saw that services, the agro-processing and agricultural sectors accounted for about 61% of those businesses that closed permanently. We see that about 76% of the businesses experienced a decrease in their cash flows as a result of COVID-19, and 70% of them had a reduction in their sales during COVID-19. And then just over a third, so 34%, indicated that, you know, they suffered a lack of availability of their staff during COVID-19, which could be understood. You know, we all know the impact that COVID-19 has had on the country and had on businesses. So it's not surprising that we see this impact coming through from the results on these beneficiaries. In terms of the civil unrest, the impact of the civil unrest, about a third of beneficiaries indicated that they were impacted. So because these were mostly from Durban and Johannesburg, so they were impacted by the civil unrest, about a third of them, of which 58% closed temporarily as a result of the civil unrest, and about 2% closed permanently. And here, the sectors most impacted was the services sector, manufacturing, as well as wholesale and retail. About a quarter of businesses here had damage to their property, and just under half of them experienced stock losses or theft during the civil unrest. So again, not really surprising results. We've seen the reports on the devastating impacts of both COVID and the civil unrest. So just coming through from the beneficiaries, what we saw in terms of the impacts of them specifically here. So last one in this, we just had a look at what recovery assistance beneficiaries needed to overcome this, so to recover from COVID-19 and the civil unrest. And here we see that 88% indicate that grant funding is what they need. That's what they need to come out at the end of this. We have about three quarters saying that they need support to improve their businesses, which could be done through avenues such as the business management training programs. And then we have the rest of them indicating things like marketing and online support, access to machinery and equipment and better technology and so forth. So that's just the types of recovery assistance required by the beneficiaries. So next I'll move on to the cost-benefit analysis findings. So on this slide, we have the jobs created by the program. So for this, we use the scientific method in determining the number of jobs created. We determine this by using the number of jobs created for the sample based on the actual jobs created that they indicated. And then we extrapolated this to the number of jobs to the full set of 1,000 beneficiaries. So based on the sample of 175 Wasim, can I continue?
Yes, I think you may. Thanks.
All right, so sorry about that. So as I was saying, we use the scientific method here. We determine the number of jobs created for the sample beneficiaries based on the actual jobs created. And then we extrapolated the number of jobs to the full set of 1,000 beneficiaries. So based on the sample for the 175 jobs that were created there, we then extrapolated for the full number to get to 4,089 jobs created in total. And then on the right-hand side of the graph that you see there, we then went on to calculate the cost per job created. So we worked out how much funding was provided for the jobs that were created, and then based on that, we determined the cost of jobs, the cost per job created rather. So in this graph, we just compared it against some other organizations. You know, we've done a lot of research at RedFlank, and based on this research, we can see here that it compared very favorably to other initiatives, with NYDA's cost per job at just over 10,000 rand per job. If we move on to this slide, we're looking at return on investment, which is one of our objectives. So the return on investment we calculated is based on the concept of return to government. So because it's government making the investment, we should understand the return that government is getting on this investment. So the modeling that we did here was based on company tax as well as pay as you earn. And what we did was we calculated exactly what the company tax implications would be and then what the pay as you earn implications would be for the sample population, and then went on to extrapolate this. So the number in the research sample for pay as you earn, we see there as a line coming up of the graph, is just under 3.5 million. And the company tax for the research sample is just over 9.5 million. Then if we extrapolate that from the beneficiaries in the sample to the full beneficiaries, we get the total of around 81 million there at the bottom, the total return to fiscus, just under 81 million. So in calculating this ROI, we took that return to fiscus, so at 81 million, and we compared it to the investment that was made by the NYDA into this program, which is the 42.8 million you see on the right-hand side. That was the investment made. So if you calculate that against the return, the return on investment amounts to 89%. So that's a return on investment from this program, meaning that over and above the program, an additional 89% was returned to fiscus that can then be used for future programs, for future similar programs to run a program like this again, which reflects very positively in this program. You know, it is important to take into consideration that, you know, the impact of COVID on the program might be higher in other periods. So just to take that into account as well. So that was the return on investment. And then lastly, we have the key findings and recommendations from the study, which I'll go through very briefly. You know, confirmation of the positive program benefits, so just sharing the positive practices and creating that awareness, process improvement and technology enablement here. So conducting these process analyses, increasing digitization, which we know is key here, as well as automation across various aspects of the program. We also have the 360-degree enablement, which is just a critical factor for SMEs in general, looking at that long-term mentorship, effective-specific approach, and upscaling the program. We have cash flow support. So, you know, beneficiaries noting that they would have liked to see a bit more in terms of monetary amounts. So having a look into that. Also, rural support, which we know was key for this program. Just driving more targeted campaigns in rural areas to increase the awareness of this program and getting increased uptake of businesses in your rural areas. Your supplier management and beneficiary communication, you know, fostering those collaborative relationships and partnerships, establishing workflow systems. Also, key for beneficiary communication was also, we found that things like how-to video tutorials and web portals would make it easier for beneficiaries, so make that ease of beneficiary communication. COVID-19 and civil unrest, the recovery support there, as I mentioned, you know, things that can be done here is just follow-up funding interventions, more support in the future, so rerunning campaigns like this would really help with their recovery support based on the findings that we have. And lastly, just the continuous improvement overall, you know, enabling regular and structured feedback mechanisms, conducting evaluations such as this one, for example, really helps with continuous improvement for future iterations of this program. So that's the end of my presentation. Thank you so much. Wasim, I'm not sure if we have any questions or comments from anyone.
Thank you so much, Ms. Motala, for the presentation. Honorable Chairperson, that is the presentation from NYDA, including the M&E on our grant program. I think we are done for presenting from our side, so I'll hand back to you, Chair, to lead the discussion.
Thank you very much, CEO and your team. Let me get hands from honorable members. Asondo, I see only one hand. There's only one hand from Honorable Masondo.
In 1 kilometer, 10 left of the stream ridge drive.
I see another hand from Honorable Boni and Honorable Sheriff. Honorable Masiko and Mpiti, in that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, the NYDA and our staff. I will start by saying, Chairperson, I would like to commend the NYDA if they are taking care of the persons with disabilities, because I have heard that the CEO is touching on the strategy that they are having with persons with disabilities. But I would like just to know what percentage do they have in addressing issues of persons with disabilities? The second question is, why is the quarter four budget for the jobs programs is 44.248 million? How was the percentage spent determined for the job program at the end of quarter four? How successful has the BMT been for 2021-2022 as well as the mentorship and the linkages? The NYDA noted it provided mentorship to 638 youth, but how does this link to the actual number of youth that received grants in 2007? Why is not every grant recipient assigned mentor? Not much demand was seen from young people in sectors such as education, engineering, health and farming. Why is that? What was the catch-up plan with local municipalities to exceed the target of capacitating the number of youth with skills to enter the job market? What was the outcome of the annual NYS program? What were the key challenges and recommendations identified in the report? In program three, what were the key findings of the reports produced? Then the last one is from human resource. Why did the number of positions increase from 531 as previously reported to the committee to 556 in quarter four? What does the position of an informal diary entail? What is the difference between head office officers and other officers as previously reported? Provide a detailed list of the type of specialist required by the NYDA. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Honorable Pony.
Thank you, Honorable Whip, the Chairperson, Honorable Members, and all delegation from NYDA on the platform today, and the staff. Greetings to everybody on the platform. Whip and Chair, let me take this opportunity to appreciate and welcome all the presentations for this day. I think yourself, Whip, and Chairperson mentioned earlier that, I think it was the Whip that mentioned that this report and the presentation is a breath of fresh air in terms of dealing with reports or presentations from NYDA. I want to comment, starting with the audit risk report that was presented by Ms. Reabi Sikungwani. On their page four, where they mentioned issue of communication to the youth, trying to reach out to the young people in all communities, making sure that they understand that the importance and or the role of NYDA. I think that is something very pleasing, that it is important for NYDA to be known by youth all over the country. What is it that they are doing? So communication remains key to the agenda of the NYDA. The other issue under the same report, the audit, I think the question that I had there was on the late payments, and I think it was also clarified. But on the issue page 13, I think it's slide 13, in terms of reported progress on the implementation of the audit of action plan, it is also pleasing that the NYDA are actually listening to the committee in terms of the tasks and recommendations that we give to them from time to time. Because when we check most of the reports or the presentations, they are highlighting the issues that they were tasked to deal with and also their progress report on the site. So it really shows that they are following through in terms of what we recommend to them from time to time. Under the quarter four report, the sector and the sector profile of beneficiaries, it indicates that the presentation also indicates that there were 46% of services in terms of more of the issues or the percentage goes to the services sector kind of for the youth. But one would want to check to know and understand what is it that the NYDA is going to do in order to attract young people from other sectors. For example, your health and including ICT. What is it that they are going to make sure that they attract more young people to be in those sectors? Because we see that a lot of young people are mostly on the services center. So if that one can just get clarity on that one. And my other question will be on the failed businesses. It shows 7% of failed businesses. My question to the NYDA today also will be that what is it, which are those businesses, maybe if it can be clarified or if they can be mentioned, which are those businesses and what is it that the NYDA is going to do to assist those failed businesses to pick up and be able to can run their businesses again. In terms of the late payment, I think I was sufficiently clarified on that one. It was the reasons were given why they had late payments, because I had it as a question, but I think they managed to deal with it. On the last presentation, chairperson of the Red Flank, one is also satisfied with that kind of presentation and report that we received this morning. But my question is only to check the issue here. Under slide 13, beneficiary satisfaction and a need for further training. Does NYDA look forward in making sure that those who have been trained already are going to continue receiving maybe fresher kind of training or to train them further? Because I think there was a request to say that if the training was longer, they were going to benefit more. But because the training took only a week, and I think it shows that the people who attended really would want to learn more coming from this particular training. So what is it that the NYDA is going to do to assist and make sure that that is addressed? The other thing is on the reaching out, is just a comment on this one, reaching out to rural areas. It is also very important because it should be clear in the mandate and agenda of the NYDA that nobody is left behind, whether people with disability, young people in urban areas, young people in rural areas, nobody should be left out. So I think it was mentioned that they are reaching out to those, and one is quite satisfied with that one, chairperson. The other part that, before I forget, is the issue of the teacher assistant. I think the CEO mentioned when he started his input earlier on, the teacher assistant. I think this one it should be a continuous matter that they look into, because I've seen in a number of schools how these teacher assistants, many of them young people, are assisting the actual teachers in school. In one school, one was told that there is no class that is left without a teacher. If that actual teacher goes to the board room or staff room or is doing other things, there is always a teacher in class to pay attention and assist the learners with whatever the other teacher would have done. So I think this thing of teacher assistance is very good for our communities, and also dealing and addressing the issue of young people being unemployed and sitting idle at home. I think it should be something that NYDA looks seriously into and make sure that really it is taken forward, and they make sure that this it actually benefits the learners when you look into it, because you know what learners can do when they are left on their own and when there's no parent or adult person who's looking after them. Other schools also, during breaks, the younger ones are also monitored and taken care of by these assistant teachers. So they are playing a major role in the schools where they are deployed. So I think it's a thumbs up for NYTA, but they need to make sure that it is maybe a continuous, how they are going to make sure that it's sustainable and continuing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bonnie. I think you've really raised some important issues that would need the NYTA to look into and also enlighten us as the portfolio committee on. The next Honorable member to take the platform is Honorable Songo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to Honorable members and the NYTA. Chair, well, I don't have a lot of questions, but my questions will be on programs and targets. I'd like to know what is the long-term follow-on plan for youth who have participated in the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, and also for the NYTA, just to describe the catch-up plan that aided the NYTA to meet and exceed a targets that were failing in quota 3. This could be useful for other entities and departments. And also, Chair, to commend the board of the NYTA in such a short space of time in the office. The work is seen all over. It's not like we do not see the work. So mine will be to commend them for the work they are doing as a new board and coming into the space during the time of COVID-19, yet they tried by all means to reach all corners of our country, and also welcome the program that they've presented for the Youth Month. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Steer. I think on the issue of the long-term follow-up plan for youth who have participated in the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, Chair and CEO, for me it is quite important, because we would like to know what in terms of the youth has become sustainable in terms of their participation in the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. But when you also check the NYTA sector profile of beneficiaries, you would see that 46% of the youth who are participating or are part of the beneficiary list or profile are participating in the services sector. So maybe we would, as CEO and Chair, like an indication as to what the NYTA is doing to attract, encourage, and encourage youth from the other sectors. For instance, you've got the sectors of ICT, which is quite important as we know that we're moving towards the fourth industrial revolution, as well as the health sector. You know, you've also got your agriculture, which is quite low at 14%, and recycling and waste during these days that we are in is sitting at 1%, and education and arts and culture, knowing that young people are also in those industries, is sitting at 1%. So what is it that NYTA is doing to attract and encourage young people to participate in those sectors? Because we'd like to see the changing of the profile of the beneficiaries to not only indicate the 46% in the services industry, but the other industries need to pick up. The next honorable member to take the platform is Honorable Mpiti.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Acting Chair. I've already greeted colleagues on the Zoom. Chair, just a number of things on my side. I think firstly, you know, it's very commendable to hear that the NYTA has added an acknowledgement to persons with disabilities in this country in their programs. I think that's fundamentally important, because we want the NYTA to be as inclusive as possible. And not only to a particular demographic or a particular group of people, but to all young people. And I think we can all agree that persons with disabilities has been continuously left out in government programs. And I think the light that is being shined right now is an important one that we really need to be seeing going forward. But my question really regards, you know, in the presentation, I have not heard anything around mental health and what type of programs the NYDA will be pioneering along that particular issue. I mean, just last week, there was an article, I think it was on the Sunday Times, if I'm not incorrect, but that spoke about the alarming rise about mental health, the mental health crisis across our country, and particularly as it affects young people. And I think this committee quite a number of times has raised this particular issue with the NYDA, and I'm really interested to find out what type of programs or type of thinking that has been done around mental health in this country, because I honestly don't think that we can speak about job opportunities, job creation, support for entrepreneurs, whilst the well-being and the mindset of young people continues to deteriorate. And I think that's something that really goes hand in hand with any form of intervention that is being made by government, is to understand that an intervention can't be successful when, you know, quite a number of people are dealing with a mental health challenge or are really experiencing, you know, quite a steep increase with you know, mental health-related illnesses. And I think that's something that we really need to pay attention to. And perhaps it might not be a line item within the NYDA's plans, but I do think it does really deserve some form of looking into going forward. I think it's fundamentally important. Secondly, I just want to find out, in terms of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, I mean, we've seen that the department has taken a step to join its directorate of youth development and persons with disabilities. And so I'm just interested how that particular arrangement is working with the NYDA and the department, because I really think, Chair, you know, when I looked at the department's plan, the APP, I really found myself very concerned, because it seems like the department is now trying to do oversight over the NYDA and is trying to almost take powers from the NYDA. And I don't think that's what should be happening from the department. And so I think we really need to monitor that as a portfolio committee, that the department is there to support the NYDA, but the NYDA is able to do the job it's supposed to as mandated by the Act in this country as it pertains to young people. I think far too long, you know, we have seen how young people in this country have really become secondary to conversations. And I don't think we would want that as a committee to happen to the NYDA, where they lose the mandate and the powers that they need to have to execute the work that they need to do. So I'm really interested to understand that working relationship, whether it's improved. And I know I always ask this, but I think it's fundamentally important, looking at the shifts of the annual performance plan of the department going forward, and for us to really, really pay close attention to that type of development, which I think will be detrimental to the NYDA going forward. Thirdly, I just, you know, around the conversation about rural interventions that are being made by the NYDA, I mean, I do not think it's enough. I do not think a lot of work has been done in the rural component. And I think as the portfolio committee from 2019, we've been really, really pushing forward to say the work of the NYDA must go into rural areas. And so I really would like to understand what are the developments there. You know, the chairperson has spoken about, you know, the Youth Month program being in Tata. And I think that's a good way to pursue that type of intervention. But what about other areas that have been mentioned to the chair? What type of work and development and feedback is happening in those type of areas? I think we also need to really be as responsive as possible you know, when these issues are raised by the portfolio committee, because if we are not responsive, then it also just shows us that there's a bit of a lag in terms of how the work is being done on the ground, particularly when it's being raised by honourable members in their constituencies and the places that they see the lack of the NYDA. And I think it also just makes it easier for us to be able to defend the NYDA as well when it comes to those particular issues. Then the next question is just around the mentorship. I'm just interested to know, I know that the CEO has just spoken now about, you know, the interventions that have been made around mentors. And I think a few recommendations that really came out of our oversight previously was, you know, the questions around how are mentors chosen, you know, what type of structure is there between a mentor and a mentee? Because I think those things, you know, are fundamentally important, and not to be overly bureaucratic, but I think surely there must be some form of structure. And I think, you know, when the branch or the branch manager does that particular oversight in terms of how those relationships are evolving, there is at least, you know, some form of basics that are being gotten right between those relationships. I mean, of course, I understand that the mentors are based on a volunteer process. And perhaps that's something that we need to relook at. And perhaps, you know, when people volunteer, you know, surely there should be some basic agreements of type of, you know, sessions that would take place between themselves and the mentee. Because I think that part of the component or the service is fundamentally important to someone who receives a grant from the NYDA and perhaps might not have the book smarts to be able to use that grant to the best of their ability, but with a mentor coming into that space might actually provide a deeper you know, almost you know, assistance to that particular mentee to make sure that their business is successful. And obviously that's just only one component of the value chain, but I do think, you know, we really need to look at how you know, that particular process is run, because I think in our oversight, it showed that there is a gap that does exist in that particular space. And then just in terms of, you know, the training, you know, I'm really interested to maybe find out more what the training encompasses, particularly because my understanding is that when someone applies for a grant, they have to do a particular training in order to receive that grant. And I think, you know, perhaps, you know, I don't know if the board has looked at the curriculum of this particular training. How helpful is it, you know, to the people who are receiving it? You know, has it been helpful to people who then go out, receive a grant, and then have their businesses not perform as successfully as they thought they would? Take the example of the lady we met who had the laundry business, you know, who really has sheer grit and courage to pursue her business, but without the knowledge and the support, you know, the business did not do well. And so we really need to zone in terms of like correcting some of the things that are not working, particularly the monitoring and evaluation aspect of this. Just lastly, Chairperson, I think, you know, I've also been asking quite a number of times, and I think perhaps if we could get as a portfolio committee in terms of the, you know, the four streams of funding that the NYDA has, which ones are, you know, the ones that, you know, are usually supported, right? Because we know, I think the first funding aspect is about 10,000 Rand, then it goes further from that. But what are the percentages of the grants that are usually given for those particular streams of funding? What are the success rates for each of those particular streams of funding? Because I think it would really give us a greater idea, because if you're giving, for example, a young person, you know, a grant of 10,000 Rand based on, you know, the needs that have been submitted on their application, I would just like to go deeper into how useful is that amount of money to that particular business. And then also in terms of the market linkages, I think, you know, it's all good and well to speak about it broadly, but we need to see the actual figures. What are the success rates of these market linkages with, you know, the entrepreneurs that are receiving these grants? And I think, you know, we look at cooperatives, which I think the stream is about 250,000. Can we have an understanding of these figures? Can these figures be sent to us so that we can really get into them and understand exactly the success rates and the failure rates, so that we can be able to analyze what is working and what is not working? And then the market linkages one is a very important one. And I think, you know, the CEO and myself have spoken quite at length about that particular issue. And I think, as I always say in these portfolio committee meetings, is that that element of the NYDA is one of the most important elements. Because as I always say, young people want to get their products into stores, want to get that additional network that can really expand their businesses and really give them the opportunity to become real big business people in this country. And that's what we want. And so, you know, the avenues and obviously the networks that the NYDA has in terms of the donor funding that it receives also opens up quite a number of doors with different CEOs and different managing directors of companies to really, you know, bring in young people to get their products into stores. And so I would really appreciate in perhaps the next meeting that we can really get a proper presentation around the work that has been done around market linkages, particularly those that have been successful and those that haven't, and what are the action steps that are going to be taken forward to really build on that particular stream, because I think it is a fundamentally important one. Just the last thing to say is, you know, the challenges that we are facing as a country in terms of, you know, just youth fatigue in terms of unemployment and a number of other issues that young people are facing. I think it really then boils down to me to a question I've consistently asked about the communication aspect of the NYDA. What is being done in that particular section of the NYDA? I had asked this question in the last meeting that I was a part of. Who's the communications manager? Who's in charge of that particular aspect? And what type of interventions has the new board put in place? Because, I mean, we all heard during the NYDA selection process how, you know, the view of the NYDA was really tarnished. And, you know, people have lost trust in the NYDA and felt that the NYDA was only catering to a particular group of people. But I really don't know what type of thought process has been done around that particular aspect, around the image of the NYDA, around communicating and really getting the information to the most basic level of communities as possible. Because that is one of the most fundamental parts, I think, of getting the NYDA to really start infiltrating, you know, places it's never actually ever been. But above and beyond infiltrating, so that people know what are the services and what the products of the NYDA is. I mean, I speak to a lot of young people, young entrepreneurs who don't even know what the products and services of the NYDA, but they'll be the first people to tell you that the NYDA does nothing. And so this is a fundamental problem. It's a fundamental problem that I think all of the board members have raised during their interviews, you know, during portfolio committees. But what is actually being done? Because really, colleagues, that part for me is something I'm still unhappy with, and it's something that I think requires a lot more work from you guys to really pull up the socks on that particular aspect. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable PT. Is Honorable Sharif back on the platform?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Honorable Sharif, you may go ahead. Morning.
Thank you. I have been covered. I have been covered, Honorable Masiko, so I'll just miss my turn.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Sharif, and all honorable members that have made their contributions, comments, and questions. I will then now hand over to the chairperson and the board, as well as the CEO, to give responses to the questions that have been asked by honorable members. Over to you, chairperson.
Chair.
Oh, yes, yes, Ma'am Tlengwa.
Yes.
Yeah, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me welcome the report and applaud the NYDA board. But I have few questions, which is a clarity seeking. First of all, is the program of the Youth Day, or is it a once-off program, or it's an ongoing program? Because I have seen that they have targeted the Eastern Cape province. In this province, they have something special, or she is the center of all the provinces. Because in my understanding, all the youth should be go there because it is a youth day. And the province, which is the host, should be easily accessible by the youth, because all the provinces do affect it in one way and other, even the rural area. If I can get the clarity on that and choosing the Eastern Cape as the host of the day of the youth day. And some members have covered me on members of disability, because those people are the ones who are suffering, and those people, they are the ones who are just only named by when we were talking, and not the implementers. No one will go to them and say how suffering are they, the people who live with disability. The third one is in this grant, if they can distribute us, or they can tabulate who are they having this grant, and in terms of this grant, how many are they and where are they as we speak now, so that we can see how these grants move. And because we have 9 provinces, if we have 9 provinces, each and every province should benefit. The lastly, it's just an encore to the bonus, the teacher assistance. I would like to stress the issue of teacher assistance in our school. Thank you, Chairperson.
Siyabonga kakhulu ma ngemibuzo yakho. And Honorable Songo, I don't know whether that is a legacy hand or is it a new hand?
It's an old hand, Chair.
Okay. So I think, honorable members, we've exhausted all the hands. It's a new hand, Honorable Mpiti.
Yes, just a quick one that I forgot. I just want to know quickly, in terms of the YES program, you know, I know that the CEO had mentioned a while back that, you know, it would be a good way for the portfolio committee to invite the team of the YES program to the committee to understand their work. But I'm just trying to understand in terms of the current working relationship as well, what type of work is happening between the NYDA and the YES program. You know, I think it's also a very important part of the value chain that we need to understand outside of the, you know, the what is it, employment ETI period. And I know that, you know, there's been, I think it was the CEO who had mentioned that, you know, they can't measure it right now because it has just started. But I mean, if we do look at the history of the ETI, it's been ongoing for quite some time. And so we do have actual data around it and the type of work or the job opportunities is provided to young people. And we know that it has not lived up to what it was promised to do. So, I mean, you know, what type of inputs have been made in that particular platform in those engagements with the presidency around, you know, the success of the ETI, you know, and a lot of it, in my view, really goes into the type of incentives that are being offered to the private sector and the need to really relook at those type of incentives to really get this thing off the ground, because I believe that the ETI is a great way to skill young people. But if there is no buy-in, then it's not working. So we really need to relook at how we engage that particular part of the work so that it does actually give us the fruits that we require in terms of really getting the young people to get the skills that they need. But the last point is really on the communication thing. I don't want to over exaggerate the point, but I do think, you know, what should have been taking place is that we needed to have heard from the manager of communications. You know, I've mentioned this quite, I think, twice already, and there's absolutely been no actual response besides a verbal response on this portfolio committee meeting. So I'd really like to get a presentation on what work is happening in the communications department, because, you know, we cannot have a communications department that is just tweeting and, you know, doing Facebook and social media, but is not actually coming up with an overall strategy of a brand strategy around the NYDA's image. And we really need to see that. You know, to simply post on social media and Twitter that these are the businesses that have received grants is not adequate enough. We know that there's only 6% of South Africans on Twitter. So that's not getting through to the majority of people in this country. So it means that there is a lack, in my view, in the communications department. So the person who's in charge of that really needs to step up, because they're not doing a good job, in my view. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pitsi, and thank you once again to all the honorable members. Chairperson, I'm handing over to you, the board members, as well as the CEO, CFO, to give responses.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and to the honorable members for your questions and comments. Honorable Chair, through you, allow me just to invite the Deputy Chair, if she wishes to make any inputs or responses to some of the questions or comments raised. Thereafter, I will ask the board members to give responses before I come in and hand over to management. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me greet the Honourable Members today in the meeting, as well as the board members that have joined. I think on my side, Chair, I'm just going to respond on the issue around the grant, because that presentation did come to the investment committee that I do chair. There are quite a number of areas that the MNE report highlighted for the consideration of the board, and part of those were the issue of payment delays and communication challenges. And I think members of the portfolio committee have been speaking quite greatly at length around how the agency communicates, not only with grant recipients, but with young people in general. And those are some of the findings that, you know, were presented to the board, that we need to start, you know, having a communication strategy
that speaks to some of the challenges that we have. But I think one other area as well with regards to the grants was that there is a case that the grants are effective. However, the challenge that you have is with regards to the budget constraints. And the budget constraints also hinders the amount of young people that we can be able to assist, as well as the amount that we can actually be able to give young people to support in their businesses. I think the report did reflect on some of the challenges that honorable members have been reflecting on, that it becomes a bit unsustainable if you just give young people just a small amount of money and you expect them to run a sustainable business. So there are areas that we're trying to look into to say how can we be able to increase the budget spent on the grant program, as well as increase the parameters that are given to young people. I think, lastly, Chair, one other area that I would just want to mention is with regard to how we have been investing in the fourth industrial revolution. And I think some of the unintended consequences of trying to move systems online is that we often forget that there is a large contingent of young people that still rely on the face-to-face interaction or manual interaction. And I think the processes of going, online, and as well as trying to reach out to young people who are in far-flung areas, should be run parallel. So as much as we invest on the technological aspect of things, we should not forget the young people that are sitting in rural communities that might not be able to have access to the online platforms that we have created. And I think that's why there has been some investment in having outreach officers, going into these rural communities to engage young people and to assist them with some of the applications that they might have. I think the one last thing as well is us trying to look into how we can be able to invest in having different modes of communication, and as far as language is concerned. I think we often take for granted that because a large contingent of people speak English, although it's not the majority of South Africans that speak English, but because English is the language of business in South Africa, we often neglect the fact that there are other 10 official languages that we should also be investing in to communicate with young people. And I think that is one of the areas as well that we have been looking at to say, how can we be able to communicate some of the services of the NYDA in a language that is most accessible to young people. So I think on my part, Chair, I think that is the comment that I will just want to have, and will hand over back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair. Honourable members, allow me to invite Ms. Pearl Pillay, who will be responding to the questions raised on mental health issues. And thereafter, I'll open it up to the other board members. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good day to everyone present today. So on the question around mental health, we've actually set aside a budget now that has been allocated to the board for a mental health program that we will be running through the National Youth Service. So I personally have been working closely with Siki, who's the head of the youth service, to develop a program around mental health that can work directly through the youth service, or a program that either youth service volunteers can go through or one that can extend to the general public. So it is something that we've also been talking about quite extensively as the board, and we're very pleased that we actually now do have some budget that has been set aside. And so the process right now where we're at is looking at, we've actually got the team who's doing some research on existing mental health projects that are currently happening, as well as a mapping out of what the mental health landscape currently looks like for organizations like SADAG and the kinds of services that they're providing, so that we don't duplicate efforts, but also so that we can find points of collaboration in trying to build a program that works. So it is something that we are taking very seriously, and we're really glad that we have a little bit of financial support now as we move to build a program for mental health. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pearl. Allow me to invite Mr. Ndlela just to respond to some of the other questions that have been raised by the members. Thank you, Mr. Ndlela.
Thank you, Salonga Pambil. Greetings to honorable members and my colleagues on the board. I'm going to respond to a few questions. I think, Chair, the question on market linkages, our approach towards market linkages is based on our regional engagements in different parts of the country with the regional businesses and local government to allow young people that produce these items and provide these services and produce these products to be able to find access to markets. And then at the national level, we do have a partnership and relationship with the Department of Small Business Development to open partnerships with the big business and on the enterprise skills development level in order for ourselves to also, even with the listed and big businesses, find space to allow young people to produce their services and goods that they supply and manufacture in order to for them to grow their businesses. Now, these may not be where they are supposed to be at this stage, but we do make a commitment that we will we can provide a presentation or some form of where the documented where how far we've gone, so as to allow members of the portfolio committee an opportunity to be able to have a look at it and maybe improve where we can improve, because we can never claim that we know everything, but we will provide that which has been done at this stage, and then let's see how it can be better improved. And then maybe the other question, Chair, that I wish to respond to is the question of the reach of the NYDA in rural areas. And I think it's a very important question, honorable member, because majority of areas in this country, I mean, this country is a largely rural country. So if there are more rural areas than urban areas in the country, it then must follow that the majority of our constituents and the people who are supposed to provide a service to our rural people, which is why we found that in our presence as the NYDA in regional offices, we have offices in areas in partnership with district municipalities insofar as our ability to be able to provide our access. And I think the Deputy Chair summed it up very well that there is a balancing act that we are always careful of. As much as we move forward with the access to the internet and dealing with ERPs and making sure that all our grant systems are online, but there is a necessity for us to then also make sure that we do not leave particularly rural youth behind, and we then provide, you know, I sit on the audit committee. The audit committee once, Honorable Chair, debated on the amount of money we spend in buying computers and the amount of computers we have at our stations. And the idea was, from the thinking of the board, is because we have moved online, access to a computer and internet is really what becomes a hindrance to a young person who is from Umhlaba Yalingana. Now, if the office in Umhlaba Yalingana does not have adequate amounts of computers and network, you are going to have an issue that because young people are no longer able to post their applications, now they are hindered, which is why the amount of investments that the NYTA has to make insofar as these tools of trade becomes a little bit more because of the need to bridge the gap. So I do believe that even there as well, honorable members, there are areas of the country that we have not arrived at. There are areas of the country where there is still no NYDA present, but indeed there is an intention, at least in a district, for there to be some form of NYDA presence in order for young people to access the services that the NYDA does offer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ndlela. Allow me to invite Ms. Alex, and then Ms. Lebu will follow thereafter. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good day to the committee. I really love these sessions. I think accountability is so important in government public sector. So I also think these are fantastic sessions. So there's three things I want to say. I'll start with the communications. And I really hear the frustration coming through from the honourable members and the MPs on this point. And, you know, I think as the board, we completely echo these sentiments. Communication does need a facelift. And so one thing we've been speaking about in our meetings lately, which I'm very excited about, is that, you know, times have changed when it comes to communications. Before, people used to go to these big corporates that held, like, you know, a monopoly or held the really all the cards in their hand when it came to communicate to South Africa. You'd go to the SABC, you'd go to, you know, these big broadcasting channels that are owned by, you know, conglomerates and corporates and all that. So what we're trying to change things as, we're trying to change the NYDA, is that when we have to communicate, like, we're talking to the youth. The youth isn't listening to radio stations or, you know, like watching sort of these kind of channels. Because, I mean, TV isn't, we don't engage with TV. We're on TikTok. We're on social media. And rather saying, instead of actually, you know, providing these contracts, providing these services against these corporates, how we're trying to flip them on the head is saying that let's go to youth content creators that have audiences on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, on, you know, social media platforms, and actually rather give them the work. So not only now are we fulfilling our mandate, it's, you know, communicating whatever it is, our programs, our services, what's happening on the ground, any upcoming events, we're now actually providing business to the youth themselves. So kind of like killing two birds with one stone, which is a very bad analogy to use in this term, but I think it kind of illustrates the point I'm making here, is that, like, you know, we use the services of the youth to communicate and fulfill the service that we're going to do right now. And I think it's much more effective. And I think it's a lot cheaper. You know, the perennial question in public sector is always, how do we make our funds stretch as far as they possibly can? And like I always say, social media is our friend. Like, we've got to use this. We've got to work with youth influencers. And it's something that we're adopting right now anyway. Yeah, so hopefully you'll start seeing a lot of changes coming in through there, which is very exciting. The second point I want to make, leading up to our point about extending funds, is that, you know, I've always spoken about, obviously, our grants program and how this works, who the recipients are. And I mean, it's like one of the main things we do at NYDA is how to provide funds to young businesses, young entrepreneurs. And so it's a cause that I especially personally feel very strongly about being an entrepreneur myself. And this is still very high level. We're still discussing it. But, I mean, you know, we had, of course, our loans program, and that ran for a while, but realized that loans weren't the best mechanism for the NYDA and for the usual servicing sales to your grant program. Now there's very high level talks about maybe introducing maybe a venture capital fund as part of the grants program. And the reason we like that is because I think it's exciting to show the South African government is actually investing in youth businesses. We're not just sort of having a grant, we're handing out money, which is important in some instances. But I think in other instances, to rather say, actually, we're going to invest. We're going to go on your cap table. We're going to show that we've got, like, you know, an investment interest, these businesses you're setting up. I think it opens the gate to further investment. And then if we, you know, manage these businesses correctly and they need to an eventual IPO or an exit for these businesses, and let's say, you know, 5 to 10 years, the government can also recoup those finances, which is very exciting. Obviously, it's more of a long-term play. But still, I think it's building equity, which is very exciting. And I think it'll be one of the stuff from government's first venture capital funds. Which is in line with what governments are doing around the world. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about this from engagement I've had with other foreign governments. So I think it's really exciting to us to kind of, you know, really adopt the fourth industrial revolution by working with young entrepreneurs, young founders, and say, actually, we're going to fund this by the government, and we're going to set up our own venture capital fund, and we're going to start investing in these own businesses. So those are two points. And the third point I want to make is actually, I have something I'd like to pose to the honourable members, the MPs in this committee. You know, on this call, we've decried access to issues of connection ourselves. You know, members of this call said, oh, I couldn't connect, or I've had issues, you know, the call's dropping. And it's an issue across South Africa. But, you know, if it's tough for us, imagine how difficult it is, you know, for the rural youth that are working with even worse connectivity. But this is an issue that has to be solved at a policy level. I think the barriers to entry for other companies to come through South Africa and start servicing the country with better access to internet, better access to Wi-Fi, better access to fiber, the barriers are just too high. I mean, one example is that SpaceX, which is currently supplying internet to Ukraine, which is now, under siege, they have signed a contract now with Nigeria. So they're rolling out across Nigeria. But they're not in South Africa. And it's crazy that as a country, we're not on the forefront of adopting this breakthrough technology. But this can only happen if at a policy level, the barriers to entry are changed to be actually more open to innovation. Because this will only serve the youth in areas that don't have access to the internet. We're moving forward. I think we can't go back in time and say, okay, we have to be a paper-based system. We have to be on the ground. We have to have buildings. The future is online. The future is internet. We have to move forward with that. We have to have the infrastructure to allow us to do that. And that comes back to policy decisions. So that is something I'd like to throw back at the honourable MPs in this call, to please track in this task, because at an infrastructure level, this thing has to be changed. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Alex. Ms. Lebo?
Thank you, Chair. I think to an extent, the other board members have kind of covered the points that I wanted to make. I think just to solidify this point, because it's come up quite a bit, and we don't want to create the impression that the board is not seized with it. I think the legacy that this board wants to leave is around having, you know, created a solid communication strategy for the NYDA. The common young person on the ground must be able to understand the product offerings of the agencies, must know how to go about, you know, processes of applications, and should have a thorough understanding of what the value proposition of the organization is. And I think that's one of the things, because these are the things that the MPs are completely correct. These are the things that we all identified even at the point of interviews to be one of the things we would like to see the agency get right. We've talked about this at a number of meetings of the board, and I think are on our way towards creating a strategy around this in order to see that by the time we're done with, you know, our term, we would have really changed the way in which the agency communicates in order for it to be more effective in the way that it communicates with its target audience. I think I'll just leave it at that, Chair, and allow the rest to be for the management to respond to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lebo. Before we invite management, let me ask Mr. Avela if there's any issues you would want to respond to. Thank you, Mr. Avela. Mr. Avela? All right. Apologies, honorable members. Mr. Avela did indicate that he is experiencing network challenges. However, allow me maybe just to, in the meantime, while we try get Mr. Avela back on the platform, just to perhaps have a bite at some of the questions that would have been raised. So I would have also been covered by my colleagues, but I would also just want to emphasize the issue of how do we increase our rural reach. It's quite important, and it's you know, as the agency and as the board, we really are deliberate and intentional in that regard. And as such, you know, there is, you know, strategy that is in place wherein we've tried to, or in fact, we are implementing, or rather using, you know, outreach vehicles and mobile offices so that we're able to reach more youth in rural areas. We also do disseminate our information using, you know, information kiosks that are predominantly placed in areas where young people would frequent. We also want to, in fact, we are increasing our outreach activations across, you know, your communities, schools, as well as institutions of higher learning, with a particular emphasis on rural areas. And maybe just to appraise the honourable members on just, you know, some of the areas that we have been able to cover with our, as a result of our outreach programs. To date, we have, during our tenure, we have covered areas in Limpopo, in the Capricorn District, Masesha Village, and Mangweng Township. We've also done road shows in Lijulaputswa District Municipality, Machabeng Local Municipality, as well as the Thabo Mofutsanyana Municipality in the Free State. We've covered your Kuruman areas in the Northern Cape. We've had your GBV dialogues in Lusikisiki in the Eastern Cape, as well as, you know, having various roadshows with some of our stakeholders in your Krisani district, as well as the OR Tambo regions. And recently, we were able to have a NYS program in Carolina in Mpumalanga. So those are just some of the areas, notwithstanding that, you know, the idea is for us and to have a far greater reach on rural areas. So that work is currently ongoing and something that we do intentionally will monitor during our term. But then the last question that I would want to respond to is on this issue of the calendar or the Youth Day program. Just to indicate to the honourable members that the calendar for the Youth Month program, as well as the link to that particular program, is available on our website. But we have shared those particular details, as well as the step-by-step on how to access that calendar to the Portfolio Committee Secretary. And through you, Chair, we would just request that particular information be made available to the honourable members. I think that covers the questions on our side, and I will then request or invite the CEO as well as management to respond to some of the questions that we would have not covered in our responses. Thank you, CEO. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I'll start with Honourable Masondo's questions. If we start with the question around persons with disabilities, during the 21-22 financial year, as we indicated, we achieved about a 4% achievement. Our minimum benchmark for 22-23 is at least 7% on all programs. But in addition to that, we want to, of course, that's a minimum. We would like to obviously try and cross at least a 10% disability beneficiary on all products and services of the agency. I think the mentorship to grant ratio is an excellent question. So in that respect, honourable members, correct. We had 638 mentorship allocations by the NYDA. CEDA assisted us with a further 500 or so mentorship allocations from their program. And then in addition to that, the grant beneficiaries that were supported during quarter number four, they will then receive their mentorship in quarter one of 22-23. So there's just a time lag between a mentorship. Of course, we do aim to have 100% allocation between grant beneficiaries and mentors. We are still as NYDA operating on a voluntary mentorship basis, and we are very much focused on partnerships to help us achieve that mentorship target. But I mean, in addition, and then I'm trying to answer Honorable Mpiti's question on this one as well, I think we are ourselves realizing more and more the value of mentorship in South Africa and its ability to support young entrepreneurs. In this aspect, we are being supported by CEDA, one, as I indicated, but two, the African Development Bank is really assisting us in implementing a comprehensive program around mentorship. And then the other institution that's helping us is the European Union, EDSC. They do quite a bit of work around entrepreneurship. And they are also assisting us with a comprehensive program around mentorship. Of course, there has to be criteria about how mentors are recruited. So of course, a mentor has to display to us in an interview their credibility, their strength as a mentor. So that, and also, we also have a feedback relationship where the young person being mentored can give feedback on the quality of the mentorship so that we know whether to keep using that mentor. We've also reached out to the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants and to the JSC to assist us through their corporate social investment programs, whether they can allocate us human capacity to be able to assist with mentorship as well. In respect of catch-up plans with local municipalities, in that aspect, what local municipalities helped us with was providing us with venues through community halls and assisting us with providing us with catering in some cases, so that we could also take these programs deeper into local municipalities, into rural areas. And really, we do find that a collaborative approach across national, provincial, and local government does assist us with implementing these catch-up plans. Yeah. In terms of Honorable Masondo's question around the difference between head office officers and branch officers, at head office officers, you will have more your operational type of officers. So you'll have human resource officers, you'll have communications officers, you'll have finance officers. Whereas the branches, you'll have more sort of offices which are focused on products and services. So you'll have jobs officers, you'll have business development officers, you'll have trainers. Yeah. I've noted Honorable Masondo's request for us to break down what the specialist positions are. I'll distribute a spreadsheet to the committee secretary. We also circulated the detailed structure of NYDA when we distributed the APP. The APP. So we will do that. We'll make sure that that spreadsheet goes out. In terms of the increase in the number of positions on the structure, a number of our offices had only one housekeeper attached to them, and that was a lot of work. So we had to add a few housekeepers to the structure. We also then had to add a few positions where the organization has grown. For example, I think we added 3 or 4 positions within the National Youth Service Unit, given that the budget for that program has substantially increased year on year. Okay, I think I've all responded to Honorable Masondo's questions. If I respond then to Honorable Bonnie's questions around sectors, I think we have seen decent upticks in recent years around areas like agriculture, but I do contend that we are also lagging behind in education and health. You know, if you look at health, for example, if you have a young medical professional who is likely to establish their own business, we have funded before doctors, dentists in establishing their own practices, but a lot of times their funding needs, especially around equipment and stuff, would be more akin to a CIFA kind of arrangement. Yeah? Education, I think there's a huge capacity there for us to fund more businesses, especially in the early childhood development sector. And we're certainly doing work with other institutions like the DJ Murray Trust to see what we could do. So hopefully we will start to see some sector-specific initiatives, especially around education going into the future. Failed businesses, I think it's an excellent question. I think the nature of entrepreneurship and youth entrepreneurship means there will always be failure. I think for us, it has always been about how we learn from that failure and how we assess a young person's resilience and their technical skills to be able to run a business and do it successfully. So, I mean, not necessarily when a young person doesn't succeed in entrepreneurship, we definitely look at strategies we can assist them. We would never want them to just go back to being unemployed because their business did not succeed. We look at interventions around how we can support them, either in re-entering the labor market or if they have potentially other ideas about how we can make a second initiative or a third initiative supportive. It's also important to remember, I think, that failure shouldn't be characterized as failure. It should be characterized as a learning experience, yeah, because often it does take 2 or 3 times before one is able to access or implement a successful business idea. I think the question around rural areas, look, I think it's definitely something that we need to continue focusing on. I think the capacity to establish new infrastructure points in the current physical environment is a little bit challenging. I think we need to leverage off what existing infrastructure is already there. So, for example, The one thing we've done is the digital access, and we must be cognizant that even with digital access, there'll always be a digital divide that's present. But I mean, one of the things we're looking at is if we are unable to have an office in every local municipality, can we at least have a desk in every local municipality? So, for example, I think we've done well in being able to fill entry-level positions in the NYDA through internship programs. The public sector CETA has come on board there. We're trying to negotiate a partnership where we place at least one young intern in every local municipality or every national library in South Africa, there where a young person can go and at least they can be assisted with receiving information. The teacher assistance program, I agree, Honorable Bonnie, I think it's probably the most successful public employment program to date, both in terms of young people actually doing meaningful work, its coverage and reach across South Africa, but also the institutional support that it provides to learners and teachers in the basic education environment. And I do think that hopefully some of the M&E around the Teachers Assistance Program will start to show that not only is it contributing to reducing unemployment, but it's also contributing to improving educational outcomes. And then that sort of takes me to Honorable Sitembile's question around, the long-term plan for the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. So I think there's two separate components attached to this, right? Is the one component is the quality of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. There's always been youth programs in South Africa, and they've not necessarily always delivered in their mandate. And the one thing I think we've been trying to preach in the Youth Employment Intervention is quality of program, and also the long-term sustainability of it. And I think that's where something like the National Pathway Management Network is critical, because although these are in their majority short-term opportunities, the idea is that all of them must transition into long-term sustainable opportunities. And using a digital solution like the National Pathway Management Network helps us to understand what young people's transitions are in the labor market and how effectively they move between opportunities and how effectively we can transition them and support them as government in being in more sustainable long-term opportunities. Just from the other perspective is that the National Treasury has committed funding for the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention up to March 2024, so up till the end of the sixth administration, or close to the end of the sixth administration. I assume what would then happen is there would be some level of review, particularly in the 30-year review of government, and that would then feed into the seventh administration's priorities and whether this program then continues into the seventh administration. If I move on to Honorable Impiti's question, I think Ms. Pelez answered the question around mental health. I think we've responded to the question around disability, and we will continue to be as inclusive as possible around disabilities. In terms of the working relationship with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, I see Dr. Benice is on the platform, so perhaps I'll also allow her to respond to that one. But I think it's to say we've always enjoyed a good, decent working relationship with the department. And I mean, NYD has been shuffled around quite a bit. We started in the presidency, we moved to DPME, now we're in Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I hope that's probably the long-term home of the NYDA. But I think the department has always supported us, and particularly recently around a policy strategy kind of perspective. I mean, if you look at the increase in our budget, that would not have come through if it did not have the support of the Director General and the Ministry. So from that perspective, they have been supportive. And I mean, we continue to have ongoing relationship, and particularly I think there's growth for our relationship in us as a structure playing a more coordinative role in youth development, and that's our focus, I think, in a departmental entity relationship, is on that aspect of coordination leading to better outcomes for youth development. I think I've responded to the question around rural interventions and mentorship. I hear Honorable Impiti's question around training as well, and I think it's critical. I think in the presentation from Red Flag, one would have seen some of the feedback from young people on how they interpret the training and how it's helped them. I mean, our own research and our own MNE tells us that a young person in business does better when we've put them through the business management training, right? But of course, we'll continue to do MNE. In the next presentation to the committee, we'll do a more detailed assessment of our training programs and a more detailed presentation of what they entail, and also young people's feedback from those training programs. So again, on an Honourable VP's question around thresholds and success rates, I think it's a critically important question. So the presentation again on the MNE showed that 84% of businesses which were funded 12 months prior to this report are still operating successfully, right? And that number has incrementally increased. I mean, when we did wave number one, I think our number was on 58%. So over the last 4 years, we've seen a 26% increase in the number of businesses which are succeeding year on year. But I definitely hear Honorable Impeach's question around success rate, and success rate particularly per threshold. So I'm sure we can ask the independent assessors to then break down what the success rate is in the under 10,000, 10,000 to 50,000, 50,000 to 100,000, and then the up to 250,000 categories. Market linkages, definitely we'll do a more detailed presentation in our next committee meeting of our market linkage strategies, and we'll also commit to doing a monitoring and evaluation around our market linkage program and whether it's creating benefits for young people. On the communication side, I think, you know, just to also say that as the CEO and as management, we take full responsibility for the comments around communication. It's been one element that the board has on an ongoing basis also illustrated to management where we are falling short of expectations. And what we had committed to is a strategy session with the board on communications and how this can be fundamentally improved, particularly in light of the NYDA receiving a great deal of backing within government, right? Government has, for a long time, we've lamented that we don't have enough budget, but government has really come on board and supported the NYDA, and I think it is our responsibility that we do communicate better. And I'll also make sure that in the next meeting, when we do present a more detailed communication strategy, that the executive for communications and the manager is present in that session. The YES program. So I think if you look at the structure of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, it's really focused on us eliminating duplication and amplifying impact, right? So it's almost like the organizations of Harambee, the NYDA, Youth Employment Service all sit alongside one another now, implementing a common strategy to really improve the lives. So we're really trying not to duplicate each other's work, right? I think maybe some of the challenges with the Youth Employment Service is around what maybe their original commitment to society was. So I think the original commitment with 1 million work experiences over 3 years, I think they've achieved close to 75,000, right? But I also don't think that 75,000 is a small number. Yeah, I think if you think about the Youth Employment Service, they don't get funding from government, right? That's entirely funding which has been committed by business in South Africa. Yeah, and we continuously say business must come to the party, you know, and business has put a lot of money into the YES program. Of course, they can do more. And I'm sure that if you were to call the CEO of YES, he would indicate what the strategy was. If the committee is comfortable, I'm also happy in our next sitting to ask YES to accompany the NYDA and to indicate how we are collaborating with each other. But we have a weekly call between the three institutions, the Youth Employment Service, the Harambee Youth Employment Accelerator, and the NYDA. Honorable Impeach's last question around the employment tax incentive. I think that a great deal of work over time has gone into the employment tax incentive. Many economists have expressed their view that the ETI is one of the programs that is contributing to youth employment. Economists believe that anywhere between 1 million jobs is coming through the ETI. And I think that's the reason why one of the solutions put forward in State of the Nation 2022 was to make the ETI more accessible to small to medium kind of businesses. I think it will take some time. That announcement was made in the February SONA. It was gazetted by the Treasury in April. So I think it might take 6 or 7 months for us to be able to see the impact that that adjustment to the ETI is actually having. But as we committed to during the presentation, as soon as data becomes available, we will share that with the committee. If we go then to Honorable Slengwa's question around Youth Day and the province for Youth Day, so I'll just to indicate that Youth Day or all national days in South Africa are the repository of the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. So they are responsible for the planning and execution of all national days. But because Youth Day is important, the NYDA is an important stakeholder in Youth Day. The other stakeholders is the provincial government and the presidency. So Youth Day operates on a rotational scheduled basis. It rotates around the country on an annual basis. Last year we were in KwaZulu-Natal. The year before that it was COVID, but we should have been in Mpumalanga. The year before that, I think we were in Limpopo. So it is Eastern Cape's turn on the rotational schedule, and I think the colleagues in Eastern Cape are quite excited to be hosting Youth Day. But it doesn't mean that Youth Month programs will only be in Eastern Cape. I mean, we, through NYDA centers, through partners, through government programs, and colleagues can see it on the Youth Month calendar, is that there'll be a lot of opportunities for young people. And really, just to reemphasize the chairperson's opening point, is that Youth Month is not about talk shops. It's really about giving young people access to the opportunities that meaningfully allow them to improve their lives. And I think one of the things we're planning for Youth Day is a massive exhibition which will run in Umtata for 3 days, where young people can come to Umtata and be able to access live opportunities that are available. I mean, we also speak about, you know, how young people are not ready for the NSFAS application cycle. So one of the things we're looking at in Youth Month is, how do you get young people ready earlier, almost from grade 11, that they're ready, they understand what they need to do, so that when the NSFAS application cycle comes around, they're not running around unprepared, you know, to access higher education. Honorable Slengwa's question also around the grants and each reaching all of the provinces. We did have a slide, I just want to check what slide number it was, but we did indicate on one of our slides the distribution across all of the provinces for the grant program. But we're happy to supply the detailed numbers via a spreadsheet to the committee as well. In the past, we've also shared the details of the youth-owned enterprises that have been funded, yeah. And then I think one of the things was, last question was on the teachers' assistance, but I think we have responded to that through Honorable Bonnie's question as well. I think, Chairperson, I have responded to all of the questions, but if I have missed something, Chair will just indicate as such to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Allow me to then ask the CFO to respond to some of those questions, as well as the Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the CEO covered all of the questions that were raised, unless there's something I missed.
All right. Thank you very much, CFO. Can I ask Mr. Riabedzi?
Thank you, Chair. I also don't think there was a specific question directed at the Audit and Risk Committee, except for comments made around communication. And I think the item on the supplier payment was also addressed. So I think that was all.
All right. Thank you very much. Colleagues, Honorable Chair, I'll hand back to yourself. I think all of the questions have been covered by the colleagues, and I will get guidance from yourself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to the board members. Thank you, CEO, CFO, and Audit and Risk. I think you have really thoroughly answered all the questions that the honorable members have made, as well as the comments made, unless there are members who are not happy with the responses that have been given, I'll see that through the show of hands, which currently I'm not seeing any. But because of time, let me appreciate your attendance, Chairperson, and your team. Thank you very much for the good work that you are doing. We wouldn't like a situation where there is any form of regression that is taking place. We would only hope that you would take it forward and continue to do the great work that you are doing as the National Youth Development Agency. What is also important, Chairperson, is what Honorable Mpiti was talking about in terms of communication. It's important that you keep the lines of communication with the young people of South Africa open at all times. Young people must know that there is a National Youth Development Agency in existence and what it does. We don't expect a situation where young people would say that we don't know the NYDA, we don't know what it's doing. They should be your first line of defense when it comes to the questions of your existence. So communication is quite important, and I hope that you do pay particular attention to communicating the work that you are doing, the wonderful work that you are doing as the National Youth Development Agency. In those words, we appreciate the work that you are doing, and we hope that you will continue. Thank you very much for your attendance, and it's goodbye. I will request for honorable members to stay on the platform because we still have other items of the committee that we need to deal with, but we've completed the work that we had brought the NYDA to do on this platform. We would then request for the members of the board to leave the meeting as well as the entire NYDA team. Thank you very much, NYDA. Goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members, the next item on our agenda is the minutes. We'll request Nelisa to flight them for us.
Thank you, Chair. These are the minutes of the 17th of May.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nelisa. Honorable members, before us on our screens are the minutes for the meeting of the 17th of May. Please, Nelisa, don't go so fast. The 17th of May, where we were considering and adopting the committee report on the APPs of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, CGE, NYDA, for the 2022-2023 financial year, budget vote 20. Honorable members, these minutes have been circulated to our emails, and I'm hoping that all honorable members have gone through the minutes. I will then take a hand that seeks to make corrections or additions. If there are none, I will take a hand that will move for the adoption of these minutes. Thank you, Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move that we adopt the minutes. The true reflection of what transpired in the last meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Honorable members, Honorable Masondo has moved for the adoption of the minutes. Can I have a hand that will second the adoption, the proposed adoption? Honorable members, can I have a second? Honorable Boni? Honorable Boni?
Thank you, Chair. I do second.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boni. Honorable members, the minutes have been adopted. Can we have the second set, Nelisa?
Thank you. Minutes of the 24th of May, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, before us are the draft minutes for the virtual meeting of the Portfolio Committee, which took place on the 24th of May. which dealt with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities and the Audit and Risk Committee on the fourth quarterly report of the department for the 2021-2022 financial year. The minutes have been circulated. We will take them as read. Can we then have the hand that speaks to make any corrections or additions to the minutes? If not, we'll take the hand that will move for the adoption of these minutes. Honorable Masondo, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. I move that we adopt the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo. Can I have a seconder? Ma'am Hlengwa.
Thank you, Chair. I second the minutes as a true reflection.
Thank you very much, Masia Bonga. And the minutes, honorable members, have been duly adopted. Is there another set, Nelisa?
Yes, it's can just I, the last set. The last set minutes of the set.
Okay, yes, honorable Pony. Yes. Oh, okay. Honorable members, then before us is the last set of minutes that we have to adopt of the virtual meeting of the Portfolio Committee of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, which set on the 31st of May to deal with the Commission of the Commission for Gender Equality on the fourth quarterly report for the 2021-2022 and financial year, as well as the CGE's Audit and Risk Committee on the fourth quarterly report for the 2021 and 2022 financial year. Honorable members, these minutes were circulated on our emails. We will take them as read. I will then take a hand that will move or maybe make corrections or additions to the minutes. If not, I will take a hand that will move for the adoption of these minutes. Honorable Pony.
I do move, Chair, for adoption of minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pony. Can I have a hand that seconds the mover for the adoption of these minutes? Ma'am Hlengwa.
Thank you, Chair. I do second the adoption of this minute as a true record.
Thank you very much for seconding, Ma'am Hlengwa. Honorable members, the minutes for the meeting of the 31st of May have been duly adopted. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've come to the we've exhausted, in fact, all the items on our agenda for today's meeting. Therefore, we don't have any remaining items to discuss, which then brings our meeting to the end. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much for your attendance and your participation. Yes, Melissa?
No, I was going to say, Chairperson, we have 3 reports, but I'm looking at the time. That was the next to adopt.
Okay.
But I'm looking at the time.
Let us put them, leave them for the next meeting, Melissa. Thank you very much. Okay. Honorable members, thank you for your attendance and your full participation. The meeting stands adjourned. Good afternoon and enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.